Blog Talk Radio.
We talk a lot about the kingdom here, and we talk a lot about what most churches are afraid to talk about or don't even know to talk about, which is what the first century church was really doing. But just talking about it is not enough. We encourage everybody to join us in their local neighborhoods, in their local communities, to find out more about what they can do to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Gather with others who are already starting this road or starting to turn around and do things differently. Join us on thelivingnetwork.org or at hisholychurch.org. Go to the network links or go to preparingyou.com. Join the network there. It's all the same. And we'll try to hook you up with people in your local area. They will not be perfect. They don't walk on water. They are not necessarily saints. But they are talking about seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And join us on Facebook. Facebook.com, His Holy Church, all one word. Join us there. We'll give you updates so you can start doing some studying and thinking about these things and start looking into these things for yourselves. But it's just not enough to sit and listen or to talk about or to say. You must become a doer of the word.
You know what I think we should do? I think you should join us for Dynamic Word Bible Studies, where I am always hosting. My name is Felicia DeRozier, and I have two amazing co-hosts.
Cross, the favorite.
You wish.
This is Mariah, the real favorite child.
Oh, sure.
We spend a lot of time learning about the Bible and possibly a little time learning about humility. That would be awesome, right?
Yeah,
Mariah. We air live every Wednesday from 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to 10:30. Right now we're going through the book of Romans, but we're going to start moving into the Gospel of John. We're going to learn about Jesus. We're going to learn about living and walking in the Spirit and learning to be a little humble with those that we live with. It's going to be a great time. I can't wait for you to join us. Right, guys?
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, my fellow Liberty lovers. This is Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries, reminding you to tune in on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific time, for the Living with Freedom show, where we'll embrace what living with freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in everyday life. That's 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific, here on Freedomizer Radio.
Would you like to take your power back by following the principles of the universal laws, earth-based spirituality such as Kantianism, shamanism, and personal alchemy? Are you sick of giving your power away to power-hungry gurus, the corrupt government, the globalists, and realize you have a higher purpose on this planet? That you are gods and goddesses that need to snap out of amnesia and reclaim your birthright? We're Darren and Dr. Joanna Wells, the Double B, founder of the Gods of Amenti, psychic intuitives, transformation coaches, training others to uncover lost knowledge and reclaim their sovereignty. Here to guide you every Sunday at 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and Wednesday 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on our show, Moving Beyond the Matrix, on freedomizerradio.com. Call-in number is 319-527-6208.
Hello, I'm Mike. My birthing partner and I just got our new Lysnica Freedom microchips. These microchips are awesome. They help me keep the freedom I used to before I enrolled into Southern Hampshire Institute of Technology.
I am Jamar. I am friends with Mike and his birthing partner. We met at SHIT. I am a liberal media major. I also just got a Lysnica Freedom microchip. SNSHIT recently mandates everyone on campus get their Freedom microchip. I jumped on the Lysnica joint.
This Freedom chip grants me the freedom to go everywhere I was allowed to before COVID. Now this chip tells me when I am and am not allowed to go outside. It also tracks my boosters. If I'm not up to date on a chip, it tells me when I need to get it by.
This chip is sweet. Without this Freedom chip, no one is allowed on our campus. I scan my hand whenever I want to pay for something. It also calls for an ambulance when I get another heart attack from a booster, which is totally not a heart attack from getting a gene therapy.
These freedom chips are free. You can go to any drugstore or China Mart. An employee with insert in your wrist.
Remember, it is not the mark of the beast. You just need to let Lysnick track and trace your every move. You just need a freedom chip to buy, sell, work, and live. When you get a microchip, look for the Lysnick Freedom microchips. They are sweet.
Global government, the mystery school, Agenda 2030, chemtrails and geoengineering, manufactured disasters.
We live in a time when awareness about current events and big media deception is critical to be prepared for the events that are rapidly descending upon us. This is Russ from Delivering the Truth and Exposing the Lies. Join Diana and me every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. as we expose the truth big media keeps lying about.
Herbal medicine, the globalist real agenda, seen through the propaganda.
Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll see you there.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
Hello Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wire Ripper. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer radio and the Proof Negative radio show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the one world government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. FreedomizerRadio.com.
Now, let's get back to the Proof Negative show here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Welcome to the Proof Negative radio show, right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
All right. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to another great night here on Freedomizer Radio. I am your host, Proof Negative, the Big Kahuna here on Freedomizer. I want to thank everybody so much for finding us today. Today happens to be Monday. TGIM, everyone. Another broadcasting week has started. It's me and you tonight and a bunch of clips. I didn't really want to miss today because I did want to come out and I did want to talk about the Trump ruling with the Supreme Court that I know everybody else in Radioland had a chance to talk about today. But since I come on at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, this is my chance to get my commentary in here. So personally, I thought it would go 7-2. Maybe 6-3. I thought the three Democrat judges were completely in play, and I'm happy that they voted that way, though. And they were absolutely right in the sense that you actually have to convict somebody, and they have to be charged, they have to be convicted of a crime before you could say that he's being removed from the ballot for an obscure law that he was never charged with. You can't just make something up. Otherwise, what would stop this from happening every election? When whoever is in charge is afraid the other person's going to beat them, so they just take them off the ballot. So I know that, and I don't know if I have a clip for it or not. I might. But that liberal in Colorado, oh, she is all kinds of upset that Trump has to be on that ballot. She, from what I was reading, was toying with the idea of just not listening. I don't know how that's going to work. But if you don't want the guy to be president, then put a better candidate than him out there. Don't blame him for your loss. And you will lose. But you have Brandon now talking about how mentally unfit Trump is, which is hilarious. I don't even know if I even have to explain that anymore. That's just funny to me. I also wanted to make sure that I wanted to make sure today that I brought up the fact that for that old Dianne Feinstein seat, Steve Garvey is actually polling ahead of Adam Schiff. That would be the first time in decades that seat would go to a Republican. So there's one Democrat, two commies, and Steve Garvey on that ballot, and the top two go to the November ballot, and this is tomorrow, I guess. So as long as it's not two Democrats going up against each other. But maybe it's the case that there's no true bona fide Democrat in that area. And Steve Garvey is a legend in California. So I feel confident that he will make the final two. And then the factor is, depending on which Democrat it is, will the Democrats rally around whoever the other Democrat is because they don't want Steve Garvey? And that's a good question. Because I do think with Adam Schiff that the other votes in the Democrat Party are a protest vote against him. I think that he'll finish second, but I think that could be a blessing because he's not very well liked. The only people that would vote for Adam Schiff is people that don't know who he is. They just see a D behind his name. Then there's a lot of those people. Don't get me wrong. But it's not a slam dunk because he has a D behind his name that he automatically owns that seat. He's going to have to work for that this time around, I think. And when you go against a California legend like Steve Garvey, it's not going to be that easy. Steve Garvey is more of a legend in California than Herschel Walker was in Georgia. I feel confident in that. But we'll see tomorrow. Nikki Haley ended up winning a primary in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. had about 2,000 votes. I'm not even kidding. I saw it was legitimately right almost at 2,000. So the rhinos came out in full force. All 2,000 of them. Well, maybe not all 2,000, but enough to get her off the zero. And now you have the liberal media. All right, now she's finally getting started. Yeah, I don't think so, but good luck on that. But she vows to stay in until there's no more states to win. I don't think that's a very strong play for her, but, and she'll tell you, most of her votes are Democrats who don't want to vote for Brandon, or they see that they don't have anybody to vote for other than Brandon, so they'll vote for Nikki Haley because they don't want Trump. Knowing full well that they're not voting Nikki Haley in that next election in November. They'll line up now because this is vote one of two against Trump. The other vote against Trump will be in November. I want to get into this later here. And J.P. Sears did a video on this. I'm going to bombard you guys with videos here in a little bit. So I work a day job and I work on the phones. And after some point, unless I'm with somebody, I don't have the voice anymore to do 3 hours. So if a co-host calls out, I'll go for as long as I can, but I get to a point where, like, if you hear me late in the show, like 15, 20 minutes left, I don't have much voice left. And I can't not pay my bills, so I stay on as long as I can. But let me just share that they're now saying white rural Americans are the real threat. The people that don't do anything to anybody and they believe in God, they're Christians, and they don't blow up stuff. Those are the real threats. And J.P. Sears is going to get into that here. And if anybody does want to be a part of the show, in between video clips, if I see somebody with their hand up, I will after that clip and that clip right there and bring somebody on and have a conversation. It's just that I don't have the voice like I did 10 years ago. And I'm not good with plotting a 3-hour show on the fly. But here's something I want to share too. So immediately after the, like minutes after the 9-0 Supreme Court decision, you have House Democrats announcing they're going to revive legislation to ban Trump from the ballot. So they're going to again try to impeach even though he's not there in office. They're going to rewrite laws allegedly so they could enforce stricter laws about who could be president. The Supreme Court said in the ruling that only Congress has the power to block a candidate from a presidential ballot. So they said the text of Section 3 reinforces these conclusions. Its final sentence empowers Congress to remove any Section 3 disability by a 2/3 vote of each house. The text imposes that no limits on that power, and Congress may exercise it at any time as the respondents concede. Instead, it is Congress that has long given effect to Section 3 with respect to would-be or existing federal office holders. So this started in 1870 as the Enforcement Act. So are they going to get 2/3 of Congress to vote that Trump cannot be on the ballot? Is Mike Johnson really going to put that up for a vote? I just can't believe that they would get 2/3. Any Republican that votes that way, that is career suicide for them. And you'd also have to get 2/3 of the Senate. I don't see that being a problem, actually. Let's see, 2/3, that means they need 67. Can they get 67? Considering how many rhinos there are, you know Mitt Romney would be all over that. Linda Murkowski would be all over that. Collins out of Maine would be all over that. John Cornyn, Bitch McConnell. All those people that don't care. Most of them are leaving. They don't care. But I think this gets held up in Congress. I don't even think Mike Johnson puts it up for a vote. But maybe they're asking for a civil war. That's all I could think of on that. There's no way that 2/3 of Congress would pick that up. I can't fathom that idea. All right, I said I was going to be clip heavy. I want to get into that J.P. Sears stuff and start with a little humor. But you know what? Before that, I just wanted to say, if you have not gotten on the Bitcoin tip, you can email me and I will help you get set up. For example, And famously, when V was with us, I spent $900 of my own money And I was at a loss before. Now it's at a decent gain. Let me look right now. I'm finally back over 1,600. Bitcoin was looking like it might touch 70. It went backwards just slightly. I'm just back under 1,600. 1,596. Bitcoin sitting at 68.4. Remember last week, last Monday, Joanna came on the show, and she's with us now Sundays and Wednesdays again. And you have, she recommended I check out a coin called Bonk. So I put in $5, was very impressed. And so far, I think I put $12 in, and it's worth like $46. I just had it up here. And Shiba Inu has doubled in the last 24 hours. Well, it's at 99% of what it was yesterday. So these altcoins, those are the big ones right now. I remember I held a decent amount of Shiba for a little while, and it kind of melted down for a while. So I got rid of it. I left like $2 in it, because $2 would get you at least a couple hundred thousand coins. So I figured, well, it's cheap enough. It's not really going to cost me anything to hold it. And let me see where we're at. So, I think $11 of my own money, maybe 12, into Bonk. And it's now worth $41.80. It was just over 50 earlier today, but it went backwards a little bit. I'm not mad. Anyway, I know that the coins are running crazy right now. One is due to the dollar devaluation, and part two is that Bitcoin is going to split next month. So that's going to be a huge deal from what I've been reading. So everybody will get double the Bitcoins at half the price. So that's called a split. And then you'll see people think that that's a buying opportunity because the price went in half. So it could be at 80,000 at the end of March. It could be 100,000 by the end of March. And whatever it is, it will just go in half. You'll have two for every one. And then if people can get in at the cheaper amount, then that's what people are going to do. So I don't think that's bad. Of course, I'm not a financial guru. I'm not a financial advisor. I would recommend studying this before putting any monies into it. With that being said, I like Bitcoin. I think there's, if one of these meme coins can do something, and it might be Bonk, because Shiba, I could see Shiba going up slightly, but I just feel like every altcoin has their moment in the sun. And I just think that as of right now, and I could change next week, I just feel like every altcoin gets their 15 minutes of fame. And I just don't think that Shiba Inu is going to have that second wind. But I kept a couple dollars worth just because, just in case. So I'm rooting for it. All right, let's see where our clips are at here. Let's start with the liberal hive mind, and after that, I'll throw the J.P. Sears on here.
You see, now this is exactly what people are looking for. Ronna McDaniel finally announced her resignation. Finally. The question is, why was it the right thing to do? Well, very simply because Ronna McDaniel sucked at her job. She was horrible at fundraising, horrible at generating enthusiasm, and of course, horrible in terms of logistics. Spending money where it needed to be spent, coming up with a good, coherent strategy to actually win an election. I mean, crazy stuff, I know. As the RNC chair, your job is to essentially win elections, or create the groundwork to win elections, especially during times where Republicans are polling so well and victory is essentially written in stone. But of course, every single time, Ronna McDaniel failed. She didn't get the job done. And so, of course, the very simple request that we were hearing from Republican voters was for her to resign so she could be replaced with somebody who could get the job done. And of course, the name that keeps popping up as an example of how the job should be done, or the kind of person, or maybe literally the person who should be in the position, that name is of course Scott Pressler, and this is exactly frickin' why. This is what people want. This is how it's done. Let me show you guys exactly what I mean by that. We got some stuff to get into, so let's roll the tape. All right, folks, this right here is why Scott Pressler should be officially leading on-the-ground efforts to get Donald Trump elected as the 47th president of the United States.
Harris County, Texas ran out of paper ballots on what day? Election day. Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, Republican County, ran out of paper ballots on what day? Election day. Adam Laxalt lost by 8,000 votes in Nevada. It snowed in Washoe County in Reno because our people, we like to live in the mountains. We're mountain folk. It snowed on what day? Election day. So the Democrats, they weren't freaking out. They weren't panicking. They had already ballot harvested. They had already early voted. They already mailed in their votes. And Republicans were going, guys, please, I know it's snowing. Please go vote. Imagine what we could have done, stopping the Democrats from having a majority right now, defeating an incumbent Democratic senator in the state of Nevada. Good. And so, I am calling for an all-of-the-above approach to voting. Yes, we're going to do Election Day voting, but we are going to use the tools of the Democrats to elect Republicans. We are going to early vote. We are going to go in person. We are going to do mail-in voting. We are going to do absentee ballots. And we are going to have ballot boxes at churches and gun shows.
I mean, he has got the it factor. I know some people dislike Scott Pressler because of his personal life, the way he identifies. Sure, I don't want the conversation to head towards that direction at all. So let's focus on ability here. Scott Pressler has the ability to get the job done. At the end of the day, that's the only freaking thing that matters. There is nobody more passionate, more active in their organizing and activism on the Republican side than Scott Pressler. You literally tweet at Scott Pressler and say something, and 99% of the time he responds. I think 2 or 2.5 years ago, I tweeted something along the effect of Scott Pressler's doing a great job, and he instantly replied to it, followed me back, and then a couple months ago, I did the same thing, and the same thing happened. He instantly responds. Why is that important? Well, it's important because it shows how active he is. He is on the ball with every trend, with anybody who's interested in registering to vote or getting active, doing door knocking. He is literally, chronically on his phone or on his computer, working tirelessly every single day to mobilize an effort to get Donald Trump reelected.
And I'm doing my part to help our country because I give a damn and I'm going to fight for it, and I am 100% voting for Donald Trump.
Nobody else does it the way that he does it. And currently he's trying to have an effect in Pennsylvania, again mobilizing a huge on-the-ground effort to register the Amish vote to vote for Donald Trump. Who else is doing that? What did Ronna McDaniel do? Waste funds on floral arrangements so she could cater to the donor class? Fancy cocktails and galas, but no actual valuable work. Wasted money. We all remember covering the accounting of the RNC. She wasted hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on travel and other nonsense. Anytime the RNC chair was needed, Ronna McDaniel was MIA. When the Trump indictments hit, she didn't mobilize a massive fundraising campaign in defense of Donald Trump. She did nothing. She didn't have the courage to stand up to the establishment GOP powers that be. She didn't have the courage to stand up to her Uncle Mitt That's the reality, and she didn't have the charisma or the energy to do what Scott Pressler is doing. When have you ever seen a video of Ronda McDaniel really hyping up a crowd, really engaging and generating momentum and enthusiasm, focused on competing with the Democrats and mobilizing effective election strategy, like getting out early vote and mail-in ballots? If Democrats are going to do it, then so should Republicans. That's what Scott Pressler is focused on. Meanwhile, Ronda McDaniel did very little to have a significant early vote impact in the coming general. Now, I don't know if Scott Pressler should or even wants to be the RNC chair, but in some fashion, in some way, the RNC must engage with Mr. Pressler. They absolutely need to do it. He can't just be present at CPAC or present on Twitter doing his own thing. He needs to be leading a team with full funding. It's something Ronna McDaniel should have done years ago. The RNC is pulling in millions of dollars in fundraising. Sure, they're at historic lows and they're not doing great and it's mostly going to Trump's PAC, but even with record low fundraising, we're talking about millions of dollars. I think right now the RNC has, $7 or so million in the bank, just sitting in the coffers. That's a big amount of dollar. Why did we never see a dime mobilized to fund Scott Pressler initiatives? Well, very simply, the people in charge at the time, or they've been actively working to sabotage anything even remotely connected to MAGA or this grassroots new conservative movement. And so it was a purposeful decision to not incorporate Scott Pressler into the strategy. That must end today. There is nobody who has proved themselves to be more effective on the ground in terms of registering people to vote than Mr. Pressler.
Thank you, Raheem. Great job. Scott Pressler, fantastic. Thank you, Scott.
There is nobody who understands where people are at in the most important, most competitive districts, most competitive states than Scott Pressler. There is nobody who has more interpersonal relationships with activists and organizers on the ground than Scott Pressler does. You know, in a real meritocratic system, if it was about generating sales and generating dollars, Scott Pressler at this point would probably be the freaking CEO. But of course, in the world of politics, where entitlement runs rampant, where you have these slimy politicians and politically connected elite who want so desperately to cling on to power, well, in that environment, the exact opposite happens. Scott Pressler isn't viewed as an asset, but rather he's viewed as a threat to their power. He's doing a better job than us, and he's representing an initiative that may represent the American constituents or Republican constituents, but it doesn't represent our interests, what Mitt Romney, the Bushes, and the Cheneys want, so we're going to purposely exclude him. That's what's been happening, and it's time, today, that that's stopped. It's time to put together a winning strategy, but most importantly, it's time to put together a winning system, and that system should absolutely start with heavy Scott Pressler involvement. He is the guy for the job, the guy who can get it done, and he has proven that over the years. It's time to win, and the way you win is by putting the people who have a history of getting the job done in leadership positions. That's pretty much it. That's the video. I am a Scott Pressler shill. If you guys are on the bandwagon, then let's shill together. That's what I got for you guys. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you on the next one.
I'm in a little bit in two minds here because I can hear what you're saying, but then I can see that you're dressed as a cat.
I'm a dog.
And you call yourself a dog.
Woof, yeah.
Hello, today I will be making condescending comments about people who think they are animals. Welcome back to the JP React Channel, my beautiful freedom-loving friend, where we like to call out the lies, hypocrisy, and corruption of tyrants and Satan, shine the light of awareness on woke absurdities, and highlight the amazing work of other freedom fighters. Now, to fight for freedom, we have to relentlessly stand for truth. And I don't think there's a hell of a lot in the world that stands against truth more than identity politics. When you extrapolate identity politics, all you wind up in is a garbage dump full of insanity. You also start there, but the garbage dump gets a fair bit deeper. So the idea that you're a woman if you say you're a woman, cool. Now we've torn down the walls of physics, biology, where now you can just be anything. And we have people who identify as disabled. Some of them are even like cutting limbs off. We have people identifying now also as other species. Because why not? We're not putting the bounds of reality as a restriction on anyone anymore. So if you're a man and say you're a woman, therefore you're a woman, then what if you're a human and just say you're a dog? Cool. You can actually do that if you live in the framework of identity politics. Therefore, in our relentless pursuit of truth and therefore freedom, today we'll be standing for truth, and I might get condescending because that's how I feel about this kind of thing. We also have to ask the question we've asked many times. With mental illness, would you rather have it treated or affirmed. I would dare say affirming any illness rather than treating it is absolutely irresponsible, and it's insanity. You got a broken leg. Do you want that treated? I would rather have it affirmed. Yeah, can you break it further? Can you make sure it stays broken? I want this broken leg affirmed. You have cancer. Do you want that affirmed, or do you want it treated? I identify as it, so let's affirm this condition. Do you think that's going to be good for you at a physical level or psychological? So before we get to the opening clip that you saw, and there's more to it, where a young lady just, I mean, she really identifies as a dog, and she stands for that, which is pretty amusing. Here's a quick clip of someone who also identifies as an animal. This person seems very serious, and you can see here on their TikTok post the pronouns it and he, because that makes sense. So let's take a look at what it he has to say about being an animal.
My name is Horace, and I'm a red-tailed hawk.
I doubt the he part real quick. Let's start over.
My name is Horace, and I'm a red-tailed hawk. Inner world, I do have the body of a hawk, but while fronting, I consider myself a Therian because...
So inner world, I have the body of a hawk, but in the outer world, I have a human body. Did you know your imagination and the inner world? It's helpful to distinguish between that inner world and reality on the outside of that inner world.
Because I am in a human body, but my identity is still a hawk. Not all animal alters will identify this way, and I am, in fact, the only animal alter in our system who does identify this way. I am doing my best to come to terms with living in a human body.
Boom! Coming into terms with living in a human body, that's actually part of something all humans go through. You can fight the human body, or you can accept it. With that fork in the road, one's going to have a lot of peace of mind and grace, and the other, you're kind of fighting an uphill battle. Here's more to the opening clip, and this is from the Whatever podcast, and we've reviewed clips of it before. The Whatever podcast, I guess they specialize in promoting degeneracy, having some of the most degenerate people on there from the woke left, and half these people are like OnlyFans people. This one isn't. But here, I'm not totally sure how the podcast works, because there's relatively based interviewers surrounded by, let's just say, not based ladies. And we'll take a look at him trying to get to an understanding of how this woman is a dog and how that would look in a relationship. Let's take a look.
Saying that you would like a gentlemanly man, somebody who courts you, takes you on a date, all of these sorts of things?
Absolutely.
I'm a little bit in two minds here, because I can hear what you're saying, but then I can see that you're dressed as a cat.
I'm a dog.
You call yourself a dog.
Woof, yeah.
Do you think
Nick, can you open that door more?
The dog just barked, so we know it's a dog. I can't believe this guy couldn't tell the difference between a cat and a dog. What's wrong with him?
Perhaps hindering that a little bit, the fact that you...
So I don't deserve respect because I'm dressing like an animal?
You don't. But to his question, does she think it'd be a red flag for a guy being with her, given the fact that she believes she's a dog? I'll give you my answer on that. That's definitely a red flag for a woman. It's a no-go.
Well, I mean...
I don't deserve to be treated like a person because I'm an animal?
Do you think that that might be a deterrent for a man who is more traditional if you're dressing like a dog?
No, because I'm not out seeking anything traditional. I was simply reflecting on a college experience that I had.
So you're not seeking that sort of person?
I appreciate that kind of person. I'm not seeking anything specifically. I don't seek people.
I don't think she's seeking anything. The wheels are spinning. When you have a sense of purpose, you're seeking something.
I'm not.
So when you look at a relationship, are you looking at like a pet owner type relationship, or like two dogs in the relationship, or what's your ideal?
A partner who loves and respects me and sees me as an equal that I am.
But you see yourself as an actual dog, right? You said you like to go play fetch.
Woof, yes.
So how does that tie into your relationship?
When she barks, which no dog says woof pronounced that way, doesn't it just sound genuine? Like, you can tell she's not even forcing the woof. It's just like, oh, that's just her nature. Woof, yes.
Relationship. Like, what are you looking for if you're a dog?
I'm looking for... somebody to throw me a ball and then also say, I appreciate you, you know, bringing in a financial, amount to the situation. I appreciate...
It's amazing that a dog could bring in a financial amount. By the way, her English is almost as good as that of a dog.
You having your own thoughts and theories about the world around you and not somebody who sees me as an animal.
I want you to know I'm a dog, but I don't want someone who sees me as an animal. You have to see me as a dog. That's how I identify. But don't see me as an animal. Got it. That's very clear now.
I think the issue is that men have a difficult time seeing women in submissive positions without overbearing power toward them. And especially that can lead into like, okay, you see me and a man sees me wearing a dog collar and he's like, oh, I want to tug on that. Are you wearing a collar for me?
Are you saying that the dog thing isn't a sexual fantasy? It's not a
Not in any way.
It's a submissive sexual fantasy?
Are
you a Therian?
No.
No, I think...
Like, do you identify as, like, other...
It may not be a sexual fantasy, but it's a fantasy nonetheless.
That's their mindset.
Yeah.
So I think that, although obviously you look really cute and all of that jazz, there is, like, as you were mentioning, like a...
That's fact-checked untrue, by the way. She doesn't look cute and all that jazz.
A cognitive dissonance, where it's like you're portraying something that doesn't elicit the type of men that you want.
Yeah.
I think there's
not looking.
I am not actively looking. I talked about how I'm voluntarily celibate and how that's something that I'm not interested in. So I find the friendships that crossed my path in a very similar way to what she was talking about, where, you know, whenever men find out that I'm not interested in sex, they don't want to be friends. I understand why somebody would sexualize me, and then upon, hey, I actually don't like you like that, they wouldn't want to be friends.
It's interesting. Her world, it just makes a lot of sense to me. First off, she's a dog, but she's also not an animal, also not a human, apparently. And she's open to a relationship, but she's celibate. And any guy who wants to have sex with her in a relationship, she's just not into that. She's at least not confused. And real quick here on Libs of TikTok, here's another example. And Libs of TikTok says, mental illness crisis. Hard to argue with that. Here is a person also presumably pretending they're a dog eating a big stack of French toast. Proud to be an American in this case. Because of course dogs use forks. By the way, you know this person's a beta because they bypass the butter. Eat more butter. So easy to eat with my dog mask. That's also my real face. No, it's one thing if there's a few anomalies in the world, you know, person here or there that thinks they're a dog or, for God's sakes, a red-tailed hawk. But the interesting thing is, it's a trend. Now, obviously, people thinking they're dogs versus thinking they're a gender that they're not. The dog thing or animal thing, it's not as popular, but it's the same pattern. And we have to think, if we weren't brainwashing young people to believe that they can hallucinate themselves right into another gender, then would they also not be hallucinating to think they're another species? So I would dare say the gender ideology, it is a great gateway drug to deep psychological degeneracy. Are there, in fact, many pathological psychological disorders that are acted out because people are trying to get attention in a way that isn't via expressing their genuine self? Is that because their genuine self is cloaked under trauma and pain of unresolved shame? Maybe, and if so, that would need to be addressed. But if we're trying to get attention in really dysfunctional ways, whether it's narcissism or acting like a dog or acting like another gender or Dylan Mulvaney, which, by the way, that's also all narcissism as I see it, we might start to realize some of this is rooted in attention-seeking behavior. Huh. Not genuine truth? Yeah, I said attention-seeking behavior. Weird. Nonetheless, this is happening more and more in society. It's the same pattern, gender ideology acted out with just different words, different hallucinations. And the more it continues, the more it's our fault. I say that even though you and I aren't participating in it. But the more we just kind of sit back and affirm it, and sometimes affirming it is just saying nothing. When we see the truth is the opposite of what's being expressed, sometimes saying nothing, that's a degree of affirming it. And that's why I say this is collectively our fault as a country and as a world. So nonetheless, I think we can choose to do better. And the more we align our words and actions with our own critical thinking and the discernment of our heart, the more of a better world we are contributing to rather than affirming an absolutely pathological world. With that said, my freedom-loving friends, thank you for watching this video with me. Look forward to seeing you on our next one. But first, here's a special message not brought to you by dogs.
And their new book, out tomorrow, is entitled White Rural Rage, The Threat to American Democracy. And Tom, we'll start with you. Why are white rural voters a threat to democracy at this point? You would think, as we pointed out, looking at Joe Biden's background and Donald Trump's, that the opposite would be true.
Why are white rural voters a threat to democracy? I can't wait to find out. Welcome back to the JP React Channel, my beautiful freedom-loving friends, where we like to call out the lies, hypocrisy, and corruption of tyrants and Satan, shine the light of awareness on woke absurdities, and highlight the amazing work of other freedom fighters. This Justin, white rural voters are a threat to democracy. Why is that? One, we absolutely have to make everything about race, okay? So if we do enough racial division, we'll have racism everywhere. We won't call it as such. And that will help us uphold a democracy that's really looking like communism. So these two authors, what the hell are their names? Tom Schaller and Paul Waldman wrote a book together, White Rural Rage. These people saying, like, you know, white rural voters, they're a threat to democracy. Look at them. They're two white guys. Those white people are horrible. Take it from us. We're two white guys. You should listen to us. Anyway, we'll hear what they have to say. But after that, I'm going to show you what one of the most intelligent humans I've ever heard has to say about this white rural rage kind of thing.
I think, as we pointed out, looking at Joe Biden's background and Donald Trump's, that the opposite would be true.
I mean, we lay out the fourfold interconnected threat that white rural voters pose to the country. First of all,
fourfold interconnected thread. We want to sound intelligent while we give you unintelligent ideas.
Well, and we show 30 polls and national studies to demonstrate this. So we provide the receipts in Chapter 6. They're the most
Never been an inaccurate poll, so appreciate those receipts.
Racist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, anti-gay geodemographic group in the country. Second, they're the most conspiracist group. QAnon support and subscribers, election denialism, COVID denialism and scientific skepticism, Obama birtherism.
Okay, so that's saying if you deny the COVID narrative, then you are in this nut job group. Guilty of that.
Third, anti-democratic sentiments. They don't believe in an independent press, free speech.
Really, an independent press? My experience of rural people is they believe in independent press, and they are pissed off that we barely have that anymore, certainly not on MSNBC.
They're most likely to say the president should be able to act unilaterally without any checks from Congress or the courts or the bureaucracy. They're also the most strongly white nationalist and white Christian nationalist. And fourth, they are most likely to excuse or justify violence as an acceptable alternative to peaceful public discord.
So they're most susceptible to violence rather than peaceful public discord. Man, I remember those, like, only in the city riots, peaceful protests around BLM. I wonder. I didn't see any of that in rural areas. I am unfortunately trusting the senses of my own eyes and ears once again. Let me betray the evidence of my eyes and ears, because I need to do that to believe these guys.
Negative factors about this demographic. Tom, what else do they have in common?
He's a good speaker.
I think that what really matters.
So he's so far Kamala Harris and Joe Biden if they had a baby. He's not saying anything yet.
Matters,
I mean, what makes
them
vulnerable?
So she's, I'm going to interrupt you. You're such an idiot.
Oh, well, a lot of that has to do with, as a starting point, the problems that rural America has, which are very real and very profound.
Mm-hmm.
They have the more problematic education systems.
Wow. It took them about 20 minutes to say rural America has problematic education systems. You need to get your kids out of rural public schools and get them into the public schools in the cities where they can learn that they can be any gender they want. So they can learn our critical race theory. Get them into the public schools in cities because there's problems in those rural schools that still say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Have right. poor infrastructure. They've had a lack of economic opportunity. We've seen a lot of manufacturing.
These two guys look like they do some chest feeding.
Jobs leave from rural areas. And that kind of left them open to someone like Donald Trump who would come along and tell them something that was true, that there is a system that has not served them well.
That would be true.
He said...
They're pissed off.
They are pissed off, and they have some reason to be
mm-hmm.
with both parties. The trouble is that what Donald Trump gave them was not something that was actually going to fix those.
By the way, that last scene, there's racist Trump on stage with a black man. That's how racist he is. He was honoring a black man on stage.
Problems, but was just a kind of a way to channel their rage and anger. And, you know, we've been told for so long, especially Democrats have been told, that in order to get rural voters, to get them to listen to you, you have to go there, you have to really empathize
right.
with them, you have to show them that you understand their lives.
Show them that you care, yeah, that you probably have to do that with rural voters and probably voters anywhere.
As you have to, you know, put on a Carhartt jacket and go
right,
down to somebody's
right.
farm.
Have a beer.
And yeah,
as opposed to showing up there with blue hair and women's clothes when you're a man. Yeah, you probably do that with rural people.
Maybe
yes.
milk a cow.
Yes.
And
yes.
it turned out that none of
they make their own food, those idiots. We go to the supermarket that makes our food. They take self-responsibility, and that is rural rage.
But that was true.
No.
When Donald Trump came along, he didn't do any of that stuff. He was just a conduit for their rage, their anger, their resentment.
Yeah, a lot of Trump rallies in rural areas.
And that turned out to be what they wanted. And it wasn't really about the material conditions of their lives, because he
right.
didn't improve their lives, but he got more support in rural areas in 2020 than he had in 2016, despite the fact that none of their problems had gotten any better under him. All that he gave them was a way to essentially give a big middle finger to
yeah.
Democrats, to people who live in cities, and to the rest of the country.
So I can say that's true. I live here in rural Texas, and under Biden, things have gotten better. I mean, just seeing illegal immigrants. Yep, I see an illegal immigrant killing my neighbor right now. But, you know, I think that's an improvement over Trump, because under Biden, I get to – that white rural neighbor of mine is getting killed by an illegal immigrant right now, and I think that's progress.
Isn't he more than a conduit to their rage? Isn't he also a symbol of their aspirations to an extent?
They are, but what are their aspirations? As we write
be
the
rich.
Book, I guess.
The rural people aspire to be rich. Like a lot of people aspire to be rich.
Yes, but they're not getting there, right? Poverty is soaring in between 20.
And why aren't they seeing that?
I think this is the disconnect, right? They'd rather channel their rage. I think what a lot of rural white Americans have decided is that their economic fortunes are decided by globalization and, frankly, late-stage capitalism, which is eating up all the mom-and-pop stores and taking away, you know, the extractive industries and coal and farming and so forth. So they might as well vote on their cultural issues. They might as well vote on God, gun, and religion, because they feel like these...
God, gun, and religion, that's a pretty good basis to be voting.
Their party is going to deliver any material benefit. They're not going to reverse the closure of rural pharmacies and rural hospitals and rural health care treatment facilities, which are now disappearing, not because of communism and not because of socialism, but because of capitalism, right?
There's a lot of socialism and communism infiltrating our country. Fact check, Tom.
Rural pharmacies and hospitals are closing because they're not moneymakers, and unless they're part of a regional chain, they're disappearing. So Trump comes in and says, let's just hate on cities. Let's
yeah.
just hate on minorities. Let's hate on immigrants, and at least they can deliver on that. And so they're not even voting in their material interests anymore, and that's causing a further decay and decline of rural communities.
I like how Trump has black gloves on there. Kind of looks like a hitman.
Right. Reverend Al Geis has a question for you. Rev?
Tom, wouldn't you also say that it is – in the interest of those like Donald Trump to put the blame on people who are likely to be going through the same kinds of challenges in maybe a different part of the country, like blacks, like browns, like migrants.
We got to make this more about race, ladies and gentlemen.
He channels this rage that they rightfully have in rural areas toward the wrong people, and those that can do something about it escape without having to make change, because if those rural...
This is a very leading question. These two, like, white dudes who are racist against white people. The black man asking him this question, do you think they're going to say anything other than agreeing with the black man's question that is so leading and winding they can't even understand it anymore? Let's wait and find out.
Blacks and migrants and browns came together. They could really force real change. Isn't it a diversion to the wrong people based on their inherent racism and xenophobia?
Absolutely, Reverend Al.
As a white man, I agree with everything you'll ever say.
And as you probably know, 24% of rural America is non-white now. And we have had
right.
8 years.
Whoa, how could that be? 24%, are they a threat to democracy? We got to make this about race, everybody.
Here, since Trump came down the escalator in June 2015.
We hate rural people, except that 24% that still votes like all rural people. They're good, but we also, they might be black, but they're probably white supremacists like Larry Elder is.
Focusing on rural whites, the heartland flyover people, and what their economic anxieties are. But with the exception of two things that we can find, opioid deaths and gun deaths, on every other measure in rural America, rural Latinos, rural African Americans, and rural Native Americans, the most rural population in America, are doing worse. And nobody cares about their economic anxieties. And one of the things we argue for...
I don't know if that's true. So nobody cares about their economic anxieties? I doubt that's true. I care. I'm sitting here, I'm feeling my care right now, Tom.
And Paul argues eloquently in our concluding chapter is that if rural America really wants to revive itself, they need to build a pan-racial, white, non-white coalition in rural America. But there doesn't seem to be any effort whatsoever among white rural Americans to do that.
Wow. Now, we have a whole chapter about non-white rural Americans because they're a population that totally gets ignored. You know, we spent...
We hate rural Americans! And again, we're going to make this about race. All the rural Americans who aren't white, like, we love them.
A couple of years after Donald Trump got elected, you know, journalists went to every single diner in middle America to try to talk to red-hatted MAGA
right.
folks about what concerned them, what they were mad about. Nobody went to the rural African Americans, rural
right.
Latinos, rural Native Americans to find out what they're mad about.
Then why didn't these two guys go to those places? Seems like they don't care.
And they have every reason to be mad, but you know what they're not doing? They're not overrunning the Capitol. They're not going down to their state capital, carrying...
As long as we don't release the video footage, definitely overrun the Capitol.
AR-15s. They have...
To me.
And nobody treats them the way we do right rural Americans, as though...
Isn't that just a beautiful scene? Three white people gathered around the table being racist against white people. Just the hypocrisy. Like, if they're going to do that, like, cool. Like, if you're white and you're racist against white people, it's fine. You make up your own mind what you want to believe. But you need to sit there and, like, criticize yourself, not, like, those white people. You need to be like, I'm a bad person because I'm white. I was a white baby, and apparently I was born racist.
We have a moral obligation to know what they're angry about and to cater to them.
Well... Yeah. Well, the book is White Rural Rage. You can find out more in it, The Threat to American Democracy. Authors Tom Schaller and Paul Waldman. Thank you both very much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, Tom and Paul. Thank you guys very much for your contributions. It's a threat to democracy. I just want to take this time to remind you what Orwellian doublespeak is. It's saying the opposite as though it's true. It's accusing someone else of what you are doing. It's like firefighters arrive on the scene, burning house. And it's like accusing the firefighters of being the arsons. There you have the arsons pointing their fingers at the firefighters. They are setting fires. Seems stupidly obvious. Now, I don't like racism at all against anybody. And I'll call it out. Now, one of the most intelligent people I've ever heard is a man named Eric Weinstein. And most recently, I listened to an episode on Chris Williamson's podcast, Modern Wisdom, with Eric Weinstein. He's a highly intelligent human being. And he and Chris were in a conversation, the segment of the conversation, they were talking about toxic compassion. Now, part of the toxic compassion is we are so caring about everybody, except we have to channel our rage against these white men because we're so caring about everybody else. They act like they care, but I would dare say what they're doing, it's not caring whatsoever. Take a look.
There's a point about sanctimony and appearing to do good while doing evil.
appearing to be doing good while doing evil. I judge books by the cover when they're in print form. White Rural Rage appears to be doing good while it's doing evil. I think it qualifies as that.
That is different from the need to parent and protect. Part of what's going on is a redistribution of empathy, which is being called an expansion of empathy, right? So the idea is we are going to be extra specially sympathetic with some groups and empathic with their trauma, their pain.
Everybody but non-white males.
And we are going to take away compassion from other groups. So for example, if you look at suicide statistics in the United States, from all of the rhetoric, you would think that young black Asian females would be at the top of the suicide statistics. But it's really middle-aged white men who are killing themselves in incredible numbers. And you bring up the statistic. There's an exchange rate in terms of human misery that is measured in suicide. It's a pretty unfudgeable thing that when you kill yourself, you're probably in an extremely negative state of personal trauma.
And true compassion would care about those people who are in an extremely negative emotional state.
So what does the compassion group think about the fact that the group most likely to end their own lives is exactly the group that is faulted, you know, for the patriarchy? It's astounding.
I would dare say it is astounding. By the way, I highly recommend listening to that whole episode of Modern Wisdom with Eric Weinstein. But for now, my beautiful freedom-loving friends, I want you to channel your rural white rage into hitting the subscribe button if you haven't already. I appreciate you watching this video. I look forward to seeing you on our next one. But first, here's a special message, not brought to you by racism or anti-racism, because that's the same thing. It's brought to you by good folks. This used to be a cow. And this is the infrared sauna blanket made by Boncharge. Boncharge is a holistic wellness company with a huge range of evidence-based products to help you optimize your life in every way. It's founded in science and based on nature. And the infrared sauna blanket is one of my favorite Boncharge products. Maybe you've been wanting to burn calories to control your...
These universities now, let me give you an example. You've heard all this talk about trigger warnings.
Yes.
That's going on in schools and stuff. Trigger warnings don't work.
Ah, Dr. Phil triggers me saying trigger warnings don't work. Welcome back to the JT React channel, my beautiful freedom-loving friend, where we like to call out the lies, hypocrisy, and corruption of tyrants, shed the light of awareness on woke absurdities, and highlight the amazing work of other freedom fighters. For the past half decade or so, almost a full decade at this point, unfortunately, there have been people doing their best to make a living for themselves by being connoisseurs of outrage, those who figure out how to be offended by anything. Now, I don't think that's a good living, and it's certainly not financially viable, but it's a way people try to emotionally sustain themselves, get their emotional needs met in a way that's inherently emotionally disempowering. But people do it. I'm offended. I'm triggered. Now we have to do trigger warnings. Now, from day one, I saw this as nothing but BS. And now I can see, oh, that was part of the germinating this little larva that has become woke culture. Someone else is responsible for how I feel. If you're about to say words that might make my body feel a certain way, then you have to give me a trigger warning. It's just all been complete BS. So Dr. Phil, on the most recent episode of Joe Rogan, I think dropped some really killer knowledge on this. I think he illuminates it beautifully to help shed the woke crap from it. And just in that opening clip, we saw, like, not only do trigger warnings not work, they do the opposite of what they're intended. Weird how kind of like everything in 1984 Orwellian culture does the opposite of everything that's intended. So I want to take a look at a little more of this clip of Dr. Phil on Joe Rogan, because I think what he illuminates is important and people need to hear it. But before we do that, I do want to say, in my freedom shop now for a limited time, when you spend over $45 on freedom merch, you get this free Freedom Isn't Free hat. Well, now freedom kind of is free. At least the hat is, when you spend $45 or more for a limited time only. Just go to awakenwithjp.com to get all your merch and take advantage of this very beautiful American Freedom Isn't Free hat.
Let me give you an example. You've heard all this talk about trigger warnings.
Yes.
That's going on in schools and stuff. Trigger warnings don't work. Trigger warnings are exactly the wrong thing to do if somebody's going to be stressed out. And that's not my opinion. There are evidence-based therapies that says if there's something in your life that's going to stress you, you need to learn to cope with it.
Rather than being enabled with it, become weaker. It's kind of like if your leg's not weak, learn to cope with it. That means your leg's getting stronger or you're emotionally weak. I'm triggered about everything. One, you're not triggered. You're insecure and unwilling to take self-responsibility for your own emotions. So learn to cope with it. Like, you get stronger. Instead of avoiding the thing, you learn to cope with it. Instead of avoiding the weak leg, which makes the leg weaker. Instead of avoiding the weak emotional area that makes you even weaker. Trigger warning, cool, I won't go near that. I won't risk feeling feelings that I'm not strong enough to know how to feel with any degree of mental stability. Dr. Phil is saying, cope with it. I like that.
You need to learn to deal with it. In therapy, we have like systematic desensitization, immersion therapies, things where you learn if you're afraid of snakes or you're afraid of airplanes or whatever, you have to learn to cope with that because there are going to be snakes in the world. There are going to be airplanes in the world. There are going to be elevators in the world. There are going to be whatever it is that stresses you out.
There's going to be other people saying words that come from their mind, not yours. How scary. And to Dr. Phil's point, when he's talking about like exposure therapy of like expose yourself to the thing that scares you, I look at everything great in my life. And all of it came from me encountering what I was afraid of. Doing videos, like in the beginning, that was scary. But I exposed myself to it. I got stronger. So now I'm at the point where I'm not scared by it. I'm very fulfilled by it. Same thing with stand-up comedy. Having my son, like before that, I'm like, oh, having a kid that's going to change everything. That'd be, life's pretty good as it is. That'll be scary. And it's like, I encountered that fear. And the greatest blessings in my life come from going towards fear, learning to cope with it, learning to deal with it, rather than avoiding it.
You have to learn to cope with it. Trigger warnings do exactly the other thing. They say, oh, if there's something that bothers you, we'll warn you if it's going to come up, and you can go over here and put your head in the sand, pretend it doesn't exist.
I wish woke trigger warning people actually would put their head in the sand. They'd look better.
That doesn't work. What's going to happen when you get out in the world and there's nobody there to say, oh, we're getting ready to talk about something that might upset you, so you get to go in this other room and sit in the dark for a while.
Yeah.
A safe space. All workplaces need them. And by the way, having to do work at the workplace, that feels a little uncomfortable for me. I don't think I should have to do that.
You can't do that.
You can. You're just going to be a weak, flaccid human that is incapable of feeling fulfilled or contributing to anything greater than yourself. You can do that. But if you want to be happy, fulfilled, be purpose-driven, contribute to the betterment of lives of others, then you got to feel discomfort.
The research says that trigger warnings themselves create anxiety. Not only do they not lower anxiety, they create anxiety themselves.
Remember all the things like, we're doing this for your protection. Stay in your home. Take the shot. We're doing it for your protection. We're like, it seems like it would be bad for me, isn't it? Well, this trigger warning is for your protection. Now, Dr. Phil is saying, that's actually bad for you. That gives you anxiety.
The vast majority of universities have used trigger warnings. They used trigger warnings for Romeo and Juliet, said, involves suicide. Spoiler alert. Really? They have access to the same research that I do, which is that trigger warnings don't work, but they do it because they're virtue signaling.
Yeah, a lot of things that are done that make people weaker. I think the propagators of those things oftentimes damn well know they won't work, but they do it because it's easier for them to do it. They face less resistance. Thus, anything that is the virtue signaling currency, it is worthless, and it usually is doing the opposite of what it says it does.
They want to do it because it makes them look sensitive, even though it doesn't work. If you want to make somebody feel better, you tell them the truth. You want to make yourself look better, you tell them what they want to hear.
Man, so much wisdom there. You know, do you want comforting lies or uncomfortable truths? Only one of them is going to make you stronger. Only one of them long-term will make you feel better. Short-term might make you feel worse. Comforting lies? Okay, short-term, I might feel better. Long-term, I'm going to feel worse and worse and worse because I'm being led by my stupid self in the opposite direction of truth. And the more you journey into falsehood of a 1984 fictional reality, the more you probably ain't going to be feeling better.
That's crazy that they're doing this.
It's crazy that they're doing it in universities to people who are supposed to be learning how to experience life, at least semi-independently. You're on your own. You're there now. You're at a new place. Like, to say that this is how the world is going to be once you get out is insane.
I'm going to start a college fund for my son. It's going to be like a fund to dissuade him from going to college.
I'm preparing them for
it's
the
like
world.
You're teaching them to go on red and stop on green, and then you hand them the keys. Are you kidding me?
That's a good analogy.
That's exactly what they're doing.
It's so strange. It's so strange that there's no pushback to this either.
And they know this. When they shut the schools down for 2 years, you may remember at the time when they shut it down for a couple of weeks, I said, oh, yeah, okay, I get it. You got to get your bearings here. When it went past a couple of weeks, you may remember I came out and said, bad idea here.
Well, I think Dr. Phil should have said trigger warning because he just suggested that shutting down all schools for almost indefinite periods of time wasn't good for kids. Seems like he just wants kids to die from something that's not going to kill them. I am a little bit triggered right now.
You don't want to do this because shutting this down is going to create more problems than the virus will ever create for these kids. I said it's going to create more. And everybody looked at me like I was some kind of heretic. Oh, my God. They were saying, oh, he's crazy. What a nut. Conspiracy guy.
That's what got me to start paying attention to Dr. Phil, to be honest with you.
Absolutely nuts. Let me tell you who was involved in shutting this down. Department of Education, CDC, and this is the same bunch that controls the statistics, the research and statistics that I just went over with you that said young people are at the highest levels of anxiety, depression, suicide, and loneliness since they've been keeping records.
What? Young people getting weaker because we're propagating things from big institutions that make them weaker? That doesn't make any sense. But if you want it to make sense, you can start thinking for yourself and realize these strategies that are trying to comfort people, especially kids and university students, the strategies to comfort them are in fact the strategies that make them weaker, and I wonder why they keep getting weaker. Hard to do the math on that one. But nonetheless, on the whole trigger warning thing, let's get offended by anything. Let's blame someone else for how we are making ourselves feel based on how we perceive things and the basis of us not being willing to take responsibility for our own emotions. Let's just keep doing that. But I think as freedom lovers, we know a better way. We see through the BS, the propaganda, the potentially deliberate attempts to weaken society with trigger warnings and the virtue signaling and rewarding the victim mentality that comes with you being offended by anything that you make up and blame someone else for. I think we deserve a better way of living. Nobody else is going to give it to us other than us. Nobody can give it to another person other than themselves, but we can be the shining examples, if we choose to, that take self-responsibility for ourselves. Worst case scenario, we're going to have a better quality of life. We're going to be happier, more fulfilled people, more on purpose, and way more capable. That's worst case scenario, by the way. With that said, thank you for taking a look at this clip from Dr. Phil and Joe Rogan with me. I thought it was just good, concise, stellar knowledge that a lot of people need to hear. And I appreciate you also hearing my delusional rants about it along the way. Look forward to seeing you on our next video. But first, here's a special message not brought to you with any trigger warnings. This used to be a cow. And this is the infrared sauna blanket made by Bond Charge. All right, sir, do you know why I pulled you over?
No idea. I don't think I was speeding.
It's that Trump 2024 sticker in New York City. That's a felony now.
New York City? This looks like Texas.
Ah, don't ruin the video now. But here in New York City, it is both illegal to be Trump or to support Trump.
That's illegal?
Yep. Mayor Adams has outlawed Trump and anything to do with him. It's a first-degree felony now.
That seems pretty unconstitutional.
I see you have Florida plates. What are you doing here in New York City?
Well, I'm a trucker for Trump, as you can probably see by my semi. You see, I'm boycotting making deliveries to the city to protest Trump's political persecution where the judge ordered him to pay $355 million.
You're refusing to make deliveries in New York City?
That's right, 10-4.
Well, if you're not making deliveries here, then why are you here?
That's a really good question.
Yeah, it really doesn't make any sense. Seems like you should be anywhere but here.
I never really thought about that. I guess it just seemed like being here to not make deliveries here would be the right thing to do.
Well, for your offense of using words and your own beliefs to support Trump, I'm going to have to write you a ticket.
For how much?
5 years in prison.
5 years in prison?
Yeah, but it's not that bad because after 5 years in prison, you'll be able to stand trial before receiving your actual prison sentence.
Do you actually think that's right?
Nope, not at all. But you see that surveillance cam up there?
Yeah.
Well, that there feeds right into Mayor Adams' office. And if I don't enforce his new policies, then they put me in prison and execute my family.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah, well, I'm told it helps keep New York City the greatest city on earth.
Oh my gosh, that man is attacking a woman!
Yeah, he sure is.
Are you gonna do something?
Well, you see, that there man pummeling that woman in the face, very viciously, I might add, he is an illegal alien, and she is a citizen of New York. And you see, Mayor Adams has made it a crime for us to stop crime that's being perpetrated on citizens of New York by people who are illegally here. Sanctuary city kind of thing.
He's beating her to a pulp. You're the police. Do something.
Oh, right. Excuse me, sir. I have a debit card worth $10,000 for you, funded with taxpayer money. Oh, and because I'm not checking your ID, because that would be illegal here in New York, you can just go get another one in about an hour or so. Yeah, I'll tell you, it's nice to see them beating up a woman for a change. Usually they're attacking us police officers.
And you just let them?
Yep, Mayor Adams has made it a crime for us to stop crime. Crime is fully legalized here in New York now. For medicinal purposes.
Yet him and his leftist buddies have made doing legal things, like in Trump's case, conducting business, a crime.
Yeah, that appears to be the case.
Well, that's why me and my trucker friends are doing this delivery boycott to help put an end to this insanity.
What's your boycott actually going to do?
Well, you know how New York has a population of about 10 million people?
Well, with all the sanctuary city illegals, it's a lot higher than that, cowboy.
Right. So a city with a population well over 10 million. All those people need food, right?
Affirmative.
And do you know how much of that food is actually grown in New York City?
I've never really thought about that. Maybe 30%?
None. Zero. It's all trucked in and delivered.
Oh.
So with our delivery boycott, the corrupt authorities who are ruining the home of citizens with their lawless corruption will have no choice but to listen and back down as a threat of over 10 million people starving.
Well, I hate to break it to you, kid, but I don't think that'll bother him.
No. Over 10 million people could starve to death.
Well, between you and me, I kind of think that's what they want.
Really?
Yep.
Like they truly care that little about law-abiding citizens?
I think it's less about how little they care and more about how much they hate.
Whoa. New York is
That's correct.
Hey, trucker for Trump, you're a fascist! And police, I hate you! You're making the streets terribly unsafe! Defund the police, you scumbag! Defund the police! Defund the police! Defund the...
Are you allowed to just shoot people like that?
Looked like a zombie to me.
It did, didn't it?
Affirmative. The city's going to hell.
Hey, where's your next stop?
Florida.
Would you mind taking me there?
Well, I guess, but don't you have...
Just get me the hell out of here.
Yes, sir.
Take me to Florida.
Hey, if you're a freedom lover, you know that freedom starts with your health. It's the ultimate freedom, and that's why I am proud to have started Awaken CBD. Many who have joined the Awaken CBD family have been finding they're getting amazing results with enhancing their health, like Tyler.
What? I didn't even know you had a CBD company.
He loves it.
I've never taken it. Please don't put this on the internet pretending like I'm... Is that even safe? You know what you're doing? This is like medicinal.
Just like Tyler.
Hey, Kamar, are you going to the protest later today? We are having a rally to make sure the new illegals getting in from the border are getting their fair share. They deserve $10,000 a month tax-free for choosing to get on George Soros' migrant caravan to come here.
I don't think so, B. I just don't think that illegals should make $120,000 a year without doing anything.
Jamar, look at yourself. You're sounding too much like a Republican. First, you will not put any more scams on your face. Then, after your 80th booster, you refuse to take any more. And now you won't even support our liberal ideas.
I don't know, player. I want to be a liberal media major. I found a job that pays $48,000 a year to start where I can intern for a fake news company. Why should someone with no skills make 2.5 times more cash than me, and I am finna have a degree from Southern Hampshire Institute in Technology? I had to fight hard to get my degree from SHIT, and all they had to do is to get on the George Soros caravan and get paid.
Yes, that is only fair. It is loving and liberal.
I just don't think that's fair. Why should we pay people to come across to our citizen we have to work to pay for them to not work, B? Why should everyone in the world have access to our money just by coming to the United States?
Because of all the people that live here are not voting Democrat. We need those illegals so that Trump cannot be his president again. If we can keep Brandon in office or talk Michael Robinson Obama into being president, then George Soros, Bill Gates, and Klaus Schwab can give us a communist takeover that the world needs.
Michael Robinson Obama is a very nice lady. But I do not want to live in a communist country. I want it to be socialist like in parts of Europe, not communist like Venezuela.
Oh no, it's that broccoli dude again. He is just upset that my birthing partner is trying to get me pregnant. He is also upset that I am black and a trans.
Mike, you do realize we all can see you, right? You are as white as Justin Bieber. And you are only a trans if you start transitioning to take off your ice cream cone and give up your kumquats.
You take that back right now and put a scam on that face. Or else I am going to report you to Canada. I can report you to Canada for hurting my feeling and a hate speech bill. You can get fined and arrested for life. I can report you anonymously so no one will know I was the one reporting you.
Mike, were you ever able to find out the reason why you were not able to get the $5 million a year stipend for being black? Were they ever able to find out what was wrong with your paperwork?
That is none of your business. At least I make enough money to not have to work. I can just be as a trans.
So Jamar, are you going to take that intern job working for fake news?
I don't know, Holmes. I do like the fact that they have tampons in the men's rooms. But they said we're not allowed to eat meat while being an employee. We are only allowed soylinkies and bug proteins. They said starting next year they will stop drug testing employees. Instead they will test people for meat. I do not want a job where you can be on crystal meth but you get fired for eating a winner chicken dinner.
That sounds like a great policy, Jamar. We can fight climate change if you learn how to only eat Zebras or GMO Bill.
It just seems like the Democrat Party changed. It just seems like the 1% in the illegals vote Democrat and all the normal people vote something else.
You take that back right now. I am a normal trans vegan black person that supports whatever the current thing is.
Bruh.
That's what I mean. We all can see you. You're not black.
You take that back right now. I always vote Democrat. That's why Brandon said I am black.
Dude. Your skin does not change based on who you vote for. And you cannot be a trans unless you are removing your body parts, B.
I am so pissed at Dr. Freddy. I have ovarian cancer, but he refuses to check my WAP because he wants to take off my ice cream cone and my kumquats. Not one doctor is willing to look at my WAP unless I agree to remove my junk. B, These doctors are too genderist.
Mike, how do you expect a doctor to get your female body parts you do not even have?
I do not want any doctor removing my kumquats. They should just know I have ovarian cancer and give me chemotherapy and also prescriptions to remove my cancer. If I say I have cancer, that should be good enough. You're all sick in the herd for not wanting me to get my WAP checked out.
We all know you do not have WAP, B. That is why you need to show them your junk. You cannot have cancer for body parts you do not have, player.
You take that back right now. I am definitely reporting you for hate speech against my WAP. That is the only reason why Malik cannot get me pregnant. Once I get pregnant, I want to have an abortion a week after the baby is born. I need to prove I am liberal.
Maybe that's gross.
No one should be proud of their abortions.
You are just pissed off we are going to defend the police and let the illegals be the police force to rule over the Republicans in the United States.
Newsflash, dumbwait. If the illegal gangsters become the new police, they will rule over everyone, not just Republicans.
Not likely, Jamar. They can tell by our skin color. They will see I am black and leave me alone. They will come after you for being white.
Hey everyone. Don't go woke. Do not vote for anyone who is wanting to advance globalist agendas. Educate yourself. Check out the Proof Negative radio show. Proof is on weeknights 9 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Check out freedomizerradio.com. Proof has on great guests, excellent co-hosts, and all the news you need to know about. Check out the schedule on the freedomizerradio.com website also and find some other shows on Freedomizer Radio.
I cannot wait until all the radio stations get arrested for saying anything against us liberals. We are so loving and liberal. That is why we believe in banning free speech to protect free speech. From now on you will only touch the records that I say. Now someone needs to help me find a doctor that will treat my WAP without having to remove my junk.
This message goes out to all of our California voters. Our state sucks, guys. Our state sucks. And the leadership that we've had in office and what we currently have is not working for us. We are suffering. And I think that we need to change it. I'm sorry, but I can't continue to vote Democrat. I can't do it. This is not working for me. It's not working for the people I know. It is not working for the golden state of California. We went from golden to totally tarnished. We have no shine. We suck, okay? So next week when you guys go to the poll, please elect Steve Garvey to represent California, because I'm going to tell y'all, we need somebody who's going to be in there who's going to fight this crime and who is going to help California be resilient again, okay? Because the leadership that we have now, that Schiff dude and Barbara Lee, they suck.
The meltdown in the wake of this 9-0 Supreme Court ruling in Donald Trump's favor is where we have to begin. So, Stu, already we're getting reaction from those on the left about the betrayal they perceive from the liberal jurists and how to them it was just so clear. I mean, they don't understand. Donald Trump is a clear insurrectionist. And how could the Supreme Court, which Keith Olbermann says we just need to move on from, betray us and be so confused in this way? What do you make of it?
It's a fascinating day, and it's amazing to watch all of this happen. You know, I'm for one shocked that Sotomayor was on board for this. I could have believed Kagan. I could have even believed Ketanji Brown Jackson would be on the right side of this. Sotomayor, who I don't have much respect for, I'm surprised. But a 9-0 ruling is good. It's the thing that the country needs. They need clarity on something like this, which is insane. And the Biden administration does all of this and cheers this stuff on, and the media cheers all this stuff on while arguing for democracy, which is such a bizarre hypocritical thing. It's like their favorite form of democracy is the one where you're the only name on the ballot. And like, I don't remember that being really the way democracy works. It's shocking to kind of see this portrayed by the media as something that was serious. And that, I think, is if you want to come off of all the really important things I think this means for the country and all the legal ramifications, you can come off of that and just look at the way the society handled this, which is half the country was convinced that this was correct and true and obvious. And the only way this would be stopped is by the right-wing Supreme Court, who is unfair and always just rooting on Donald Trump. And then when you get a 9-0 ruling, real clarity here that this is insane and everyone knew it was insane. And then to see the way the media had just led people down this road over and over and over again, and gets their hopes up, right? I guess if you're a left-wing person and you want no competition in the presidential election, you thought this was going to be a good thing. Instead, they embarrass themselves. And there will be no retribution. We will not see some retrospective from these media organizations. Why did we give this credibility? Why did we run articles? Why did we take Lawrence Tribe seriously when he was making these arguments? Once again, the media just falls down flat on its face with no ideas of where it's going from here.
Here's a sampling, Dave, of some of the reaction. Olbermann's always the best. The court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson Kagan and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. And collectively, the court, that's in quotes, has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved. For good measure, adding, the Supreme Court is full of shit. Okay. We could keep going. As you might imagine, there's equally, well, maybe not equally, but similar hysterical reaction from people feeling that's the word, betrayed by them, that they didn't get their way. They are really looking at the Supreme Court, whether it is in the January 6th appeal that just went up and that they took on whether he's got immunity for these criminal acts, alleged criminal acts taken while president, or it's this case in which they said, no, individual states can't kick a presidential candidate off the ballot. They feel like the court owes them something. It's up to them to stop him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, unlike Stu, I've always known that Sotomayor is a secret ultra MAGA Trumper. I know a lot of people weren't aware of that. Now that cat's finally out of the bag. And
you know, he is doing better with the Hispanic vote.
There you go. No, but listen, I mean, this case in particular was the Mona Lisa of hypocrisy and projection. You know, Donald Trump's a threat to democracy, so we're not going to let you vote for him. I mean, come on. It was always completely absurd. But I think the good takeaway from this and why it's so important that it was 9-0 is that yet again, the guardrails of American democracy have held firm. You know, both sides, you know, the left looks at January 6th and they say, we were 5 minutes from losing our Republic. No, we weren't. What was going to happen?
No,
the Joint Chiefs of Staff were going to walk in and make QAnon shaman the president? I mean, it's absurd. And you know, on the other side, it's like, you know, these prosecutions of Trump and everything they're doing, it's the same as Russia, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not, because we do have these guardrails. They do work. The founders created amazing checks and balances. Americans throughout the century have sort of cherished and protected that. It's our job to keep doing that. And so really good to see a 9-0 Supreme Court decision on this case today, which really was, I think, a pretty obvious call.
Totally agree with all that. I want to run this soundbite for you. I played it for the guys in the fifth column last week. It's absolutely nuts, but it bears another play, okay, because this is Chris Hayes reacting to the decision to take up whether Trump has immunity for alleged criminal acts. The left did not want the high court to take that case either. They wanted them to just let the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals saying he does not have immunity to stand, but they took it up, thus delaying the trial in federal court in D.C. on those January 6th charges until at the earliest, early July, but it's going to be later than that. But this is what you're going to hear from him tonight and from the left tonight, because they clearly look at SCOTUS as their last best chance to stop him and are starting to realize, actually, they're not an ally. Watch.
That they would rob the People's Department of Justice the opportunity to present all the evidence of his guilt. That the voters of this country, you and I, the hundreds of millions of us, might be robbed of the information we need to determine whether the man is guilty of the gravest crime any politician has been accused of since the Civil War. If you were hoping that Donald Trump's authoritarian disregard for the rule of law was going to be stopped by Americans' institutions and the court at the highest level, that hope is severely diminished today. The Mueller investigation didn't stop him. Two congressional impeachments did not stop him. Today is the starkest proof yet that in the zero-sum battle between MAGA and democracy, there was and is only one thing that could ever truly stop Donald Trump, and that is we the people. Americans voting against him, a majority.
You can see the little light bulbs, too. Right? Like,
yeah. That's,
we know.
That's how this is supposed to work. If you don't want a guy to be president of the United States, you should vote for the other guy and go out and actually win. That's how this is supposed to operate.
Newsflash.
This is how our system works. Right? I mean, I thought this was obvious to everyone. You know, if this guy is the Hitlerian figure you keep making him out to be, go out and beat him. Like, just
right.
Win. That should be the easiest thing in the world. It's not like Donald Trump doesn't give you real opportunities to criticize him. It's not like Donald Trump is the perfect candidate and everyone, I just can't find anything to say that's negative about him. They seem to find tons of things that are negative to say about him. It's just that the American people increasingly don't buy it. And this idea that the delay of the Supreme Court is some terrible, terrible thing, it took them 2 years to move on this case. Like, they had thrown tons of other people in prison.
And they did.
For
and by the way,
6th.
Let's not forget, he was never charged with insurrection. He was not charged with insurrection.
They didn't even put it in the impeachment. They could have put anything in there. They didn't even put it in the impeachment. They had all of this time. They waited until he actually ran for president to do anything on this because honestly, if he had not run for president, probably they never would have done any of this. But they wanted to stop him. They wanted to make sure that he could not be president again. So they're throwing every piece of spaghetti they can find against the wall to see if anything will stick. And it's just an embarrassing failure. We are up to our knees at this point in spaghetti, and more of it will come. We'll eventually be up to our necks. It's just they will try literally anything except just winning. Go out there and beat the guy.
In the famous words of Adrian to Rocky before the last big battle in Rocky I, win. That's the best advice. Just win. You
I mean,
already have the
didn't,
media.
But it's good advice. Right?
Yeah, but he made it 15 rounds. That was a win in the moment.
All right.
So it's like the point is they control the media. They have the best get out the vote operation in America and have for a long time now. They have the least popular candidate running as a Republican that we've had in decades. So just win. What are you in such a panic about? Oh, wait, your candidate is horrible. Well, then do something about it. Don't be such P-words. That's the one swear I don't like. Don't be such a P-word. Go out and find another candidate who can win. I don't care. I don't want to hear your whining when you won't find another candidate because you know your guy is struggling. You just want to bash our democracy, get rid of the Supreme Court, mess with our balloting system. No, it's a no. You were stopped by the U.S. Supreme Court. I want to play this for you, Dave. CNN in the middle of its reaction. Take a listen.
Look, unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong that this is the way the framers wanted it to be. They wanted Congress, the people who are closest to their constituents, to be able to make the rules of the laws. That doesn't change the fact that because of gerrymandering in the House and all kinds of other issues, they're not doing their job on a lot of these big issues.
Yeah. I agree it's very unlikely, close to impossible that Congress will take action. But this is now a fair question that Manu Raju, Melanie Zanona should be asking members of Congress. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to pass legislation that would give us rules for how this works? It could only be in the future, by the way.
Okay, so you see the people and their representatives, Congress, they're not doing their jobs because of gerrymandering, but meaning holding this insurrectionist to account. And that's really the lamentable thing here, that really Congress should pass the law saying that he's an insurrectionist and he'd have to be bounced off. And that's really the solution here. Okay, so a couple of years ago, I bought these glasses from Bond Charge. I use the orange ones when I'm watching TV, and I use the yellow ones when my eyes are tired from looking at the computer, and I love them.
You see, now this
is exactly what people are looking for. Ronna McDaniel finally announced her resignation. Finally. The question is, why was it the right thing to do? Well, very simply because Ronna McDaniel sucked at her job. She was horrible at fundraising, horrible at generating enthusiasm, and of course, horrible in terms of logistics. Spending money where it needed to be spent, coming up with a good, coherent strategy to actually win an election. I mean, crazy stuff, I know. As the RNC chair, your job is to essentially win elections or create the groundwork to win elections, especially during times where Republicans are polling so well and victory is essentially written in stone. But of course, every single time Ronna McDaniel failed, she didn't get the job done. And so, of course, the very simple request that we were hearing from Republican voters was for her to resign so she could be replaced with somebody who could get the job done. And of course, the name that keeps popping up as an example of how the job should be done, or the kind of person, or maybe literally the person who should be in the position, that name is of course Scott Pressler, and this is exactly frickin' why. This is what people want. This is how it's done. Let me show you guys exactly what I mean by that. We got some stuff to get into, so let's roll the tape. All right, folks, this right here is why Scott Pressler should be officially leading on-the-ground efforts to get Donald Trump elected as the 47th President of the United States.
Harris County, Texas ran out of paper ballots on what day? Election day. Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, Republican County, ran out of paper ballots on what day? Election day. Adam Laxalt lost by 8,000 votes in Nevada. It snowed in Washoe County and Reno, because our people, we like to live in the mountains, we're mountain folk. It snowed on what day? Election day. So the Democrats, they weren't freaking out, they weren't panicking. They had already ballot harvested, they had already early voted, they already mailed in their votes. And Republicans were going, guys, please, I know it's snowing, please go vote. Imagine what we could have done, stopping the Democrats from having a majority right now, defeating an incumbent Democratic senator in the state of Nevada. Good. And so, I am calling for an all-of-the-above approach to voting. Yes, we're going to do Election Day voting, but we are going to use the tools of the Democrats to elect Republicans. We are going to early vote. We are going to go in person. We are going to do mail-in voting. We are going to do absentee ballots. And we are going to have ballot boxes at churches and gun shows.
I mean, he has got the it factor. I know some people dislike Scott Pressler because of his personal life, the way he identifies. Sure, I don't want the conversation to head towards that direction at all. So let's focus on ability here. Scott Pressler has the ability to get the job done. At the end of the day, that's the only freaking thing that matters. There is nobody more passionate, more active in their organizing and activism on the Republican side than Scott Pressler. You literally tweet at Scott Pressler and say something, and 99% of the time he responds. I think 2 or 2.5 years ago, I tweeted something along the effect of Scott Pressler's doing a great job, and he instantly replied to it, followed me back, and then a couple months ago, I did the same thing, and the same thing happened. He instantly responds. Why is that important? Well, it's important because it shows how active he is. He is on the ball with every trend, with anybody who's interested in registering to vote or getting active, doing door knocking. He is literally, chronically on his phone or on his computer, working tirelessly every single day to mobilize an effort to get Donald Trump reelected.
And I'm doing my part to help our country because I give a damn and I'm going to fight for it, and I am 100% voting for Donald Trump.
Nobody else does it the way that he does it. And currently he's trying to have an effect in Pennsylvania, again mobilizing a huge on-the-ground effort to register the Amish vote to vote for Donald Trump. Who else is doing that? What did Ronna McDaniel do? Waste funds on floral arrangements so she could cater to the donor class? Fancy cocktails and galas, but no actual valuable work. Wasted money. We all remember covering the accounting of the RNC. She wasted hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on travel and other nonsense. Anytime the RNC chair was needed, Ronna McDaniel was MIA. When the Trump indictments hit, she didn't mobilize a massive fundraising campaign in defense of Donald Trump. She did nothing. She didn't have the courage to stand up to the establishment GOP powers that be. She didn't have the courage to stand up to her Uncle Mitt, That's the reality, and she didn't have the charisma or the energy to do what Scott Pressler is doing. When have you ever seen a video of Ronda McDaniel really hyping up a crowd, really engaging and generating momentum and enthusiasm, focused on competing with the Democrats and mobilizing effective election strategy, like getting out early vote and mail-in ballots? If Democrats are going to do it, then so should Republicans. That's what Scott Pressler is focused on. Meanwhile, Ronda McDaniel did very little to have a significant early vote impact in the coming general. Now, I don't know if Scott Pressler should or even wants to be the RNC chair, but in some fashion, in some way, the RNC must engage with Mr. Pressler. They absolutely need to do it. He can't just be present at CPAC or present on Twitter doing his own thing. He needs to be leading a team with full funding. It's something Ronda McDaniel should have done years ago. The RNC is pulling in millions of dollars in fundraising. Sure, they're at historic lows and they're not doing great and it's mostly going to Trump's PAC, but even with record low fundraising, we're talking about millions of dollars. I think right now the RNC has, I think, $7 million in the bank, just sitting in the coffers. That's a big amount of dollar. Why did we never see a dime mobilized to fund Scott Pressler initiatives? Well, very simply, the people in charge at the time, or they've been actively working to sabotage anything even remotely connected to MAGA or this grassroots new conservative movement, and so it was a purposeful decision to not incorporate Scott Pressler into the strategy. That must end today. There is nobody who has proved themselves to be more effective on the ground in terms of registering people to vote than Mr. Pressler.
Thank you, Raheem. Great job. Scott Pressler, fantastic. Thank you, Scott.
There is nobody who understands where people are at in the most important, most competitive districts, most competitive states than Scott Pressler. There is nobody who has more interpersonal relationships with activists and organizers on the ground than Scott Pressler does. You know, in a real meritocratic system, if it was about generating sales and generating dollars, Scott Pressler at this point would probably be the freaking CEO. But of course, in the world of politics, where entitlement runs rampant, where you have these slimy politicians and politically connected elite who want so desperately to cling on to power, well, in that environment, the exact opposite happens. Scott Pressler isn't viewed as an asset, but rather he's viewed as a threat to their power. He's doing a better job than us, and he's representing an initiative that may represent the American constituents or Republican constituents, but it doesn't represent our interests, what Mitt Romney, the Bushes, and the Cheneys want, so we're going to purposely exclude him. That's what's been happening, and it's time, today, that that stop. It's time to put together a winning strategy, but most importantly, it's time to put together a winning system, and that system should absolutely start with heavy Scott Pressler involvement. He is the guy for the job, the guy who can get it done, and he has proven that over the years. It's time to win, and the way you win is by putting the people who have a history of getting the job done in leadership positions. That's pretty much it. That's the video. I am a Scott Pressler shill. If you guys are on the bandwagon, then let's shill together. That's what I got for you guys. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you on the next one.
What's up, guys? Boy, Benny. So, have you ever been watching a movie? You're like a little kid, and you're watching a movie with your mom and dad, and there's a scene with nudity in it, a sex scene, or a really gory scene, a lot of cursing and blood in it, and they jump over and grab the remote. Fast forward. You can't see that, little kid. And maybe you're justified, right? I have little kids. I don't want to expose them to all this type of smut and trash, and I certainly don't want that. So I totally get that, right? I totally get it. But what if, like, that happened with, like, your buddy or your spouse, and you're, like, both adults? Like, what if that happened, and you're sitting there chilling, and your buddy, like, grabs the remote, like, you can't see that? I'm going to protect you. You'd be like, off, dude. I'm an adult, all right? Like, chill out. What is this nanny state situation going on here? And the nanny state, of course, is something that the left loves. They love being able to control what you can and cannot see, be able to literally mind control you. And it is why there is a brand new and shocking phenomenon that is occurring where the media companies are deciding when and where to broadcast the words of Donald Trump. Now, let's separate the fact that Donald Trump is former president, the Republican frontrunner, and inarguably one of the most famous and culturally dominating figures to ever exist, right? This is what it'll look like today. Very rare, where Donald Trump's reaction to the Supreme Court ruling 9-0 and devastating the left was being covered live by everyone, right? Look at that. Donald Trump, sort of like a clean sweep across the board. So much so that Team Trump was tweeting all eyes on President Trump. This was, of course, naturally a problem because libs decided that in 2016, when they used to do this, that was a bad idea. In fact, going wall-to-wall coverage on Trump, which you may recall when he was first running for president, actually helped him win because people loved his messages. And so it's why before every Trump event on some of the more hysterical fascistic channels, nanny state, remember the remote control, nanny state channels, they have to give you little disclaimers before Trump speak like this.
This is a decision that we revisit constantly and that we will revisit constantly, but tonight we're expecting Trump to speak momentarily. We are going to go to those remarks to see how he uses this moment, at least at first. We'll see how it goes. Again, this is a decision that is one that we consider to be an open-ended live decision. Let's go to Trump headquarters right now in Nashua, New Hampshire.
This is Donald Trump winning in historic fashion the New Hampshire primaries. And so, ladies and gentlemen, the censorship, the nanny state, and more importantly, the insult to their audience, which is really what this is all about. They don't think their audience can take it. They think so little of their adult viewership on MSNBC that they've decided that they're going to censor Donald Trump, that they can't handle it. They're like your buddy grabbing the remote and being like, you can't watch that sex scene, or you can't watch this gory scene in the battlefield, Braveheart, whatever. You're not allowed, okay? We're going to see how it goes, but we got to stop in the fast forward button here just in case. Well, they did it today, with Donald Trump speaking about his victory in the Supreme Court, his dominating victory, in fact. A hysterical moment here from MSNBC where Carter Tarr decided to fact-check Donald Trump live on air and then to cut away from the remarks.
It has to be free. A president has to be, if the president does a good job. I did. Some people would say a great job.
Okay, the White House has not had any coordination with the DOJ on the prosecutions regarding Donald Trump. This is totally separate. It's a special counsel. The special counsel decided to bring charges. In terms of the Fani Willis stuff, I believe that Nathan Wade testified he was making more money before he started to work for Fani Willis down there. Let's go back to Gary.
So here's what's interesting. During her fact check there of Donald Trump, Katie Tarr literally spreads disinformation. How do I know that? Because I read the New York Times. Oh, is the New York Times fake news? Check this out. From the New York Times, Garland faces growing pressure on January 6th investigation widens. The inquiry is a test. President Biden and Attorney General both came from into office promising to restore the Justice Department's independence. Oh, man. This from the New York Times says that Mr. Biden confided to his inner circle that he believed that former President Donald Trump was a threat to democracy and should be prosecuted, according to two people familiar with his comments. While the president has never communicated his frustrations directly to Garland, he has said privately he wants Garland to act less like a ponderous judge and more like a prosecutor who's willing to take decisive actions in the events of January 6th. Oh, man. So Joe Biden's not going to pressure his attorney general to make these decisions. He's just going to vomit it into the pages of the New York Times with a giant headline and a giant image of Merrick Garland. It's so good. Oh, yeah, Katie Tarr. No, totally independent. Fact check. Gotcha. Oh, man, it keeps getting better. MSNBC has on-air salty meltdown. Cuts away from Trump's remarks just to and mule. What are they saying instead of listening to the president? What more important thing would you have to do than listen to Donald Trump just speak live, right? Whether you like it or not, it's going to be important. It's newsworthy. But instead, here's what MSNBC decided to program.
Come out with a prepared statement. Why this Why going back to the, you know, the bad old days of Trump where he just comes out with a word salad and, you know, whatever comes to mind and whatever allegation he can toss out?
That's a great question, Katie, and one that I'll be trying to answer today. Donald Trump has displayed more discipline over the course of this campaign than some of his previous ones in these moments. Not really what you saw here today. Clearly not a prepared statement. Clearly not especially focused on the ruling today. But I think goes to the point that he sort of looks at all of these cases holistically, and he tries to argue that they're all related. He's trying to make the case that somehow this is all coordinated by the White House to go after him and taking advantage of the fact that he's going to have a lot of eyeballs on him because of the Colorado ruling today. But this is it, right? I think you heard there one of the things that I think was most clear was related to a point that Ken made earlier, this idea that arguing that he shouldn't be prosecuted for things. He didn't mention any of the things related to January 6th. He was making a case that he shouldn't be prosecuted for going after ISIS or General Soleimani, the Iranian general who he killed when he was president. Those are not the things that he is being prosecuted for. So trying to project out a little bit of, you know, protection for himself rhetorically as these cases advance and trying to draw people into the idea that somehow all of these things are part of a massive conspiracy to stop.
Oh, yeah, they're not part of a massive conspiracy to stop Trump. No way, they're not. You just have both MSNBC and CNN cutting away from Trump's remarks after this historic Supreme Court 9-0 devastating victory for Trump. No, it's not a conspiracy at all. We're just not going to let the man speak. Shut up, shut up, shut up. Watch, you're CNN doing the same thing.
Okay, we've been listening to Donald Trump, and we're going to continue to monitor as he takes questions from reporters there in Mar-a-Lago. We have been hearing him first and foremost talk about the fact that he is obviously very pleased about the Supreme Court decision to keep him on the ballot or prevent Colorado from taking him off the ballot and therefore other states as well because of the actions that he was involved with in and around January 6th. Then he veered into lots of other areas where we definitely have to fact check. Daniel, I want to first just say the last thing he was talking about, immigration, which of course has nothing to do with the Supreme Court decision today. He said a number of things that I hope that you get into, one of which was 20 million people he believes are in this country. We don't have any evidence to back that up, and going on about the need for the president to use his executive authorities to quote unquote close the border. There is an antiquated immigration system. Congress in a bipartisan way in the U.S. Senate tried to update it at least a little bit, and it was killed because the president did not want to give Joe Biden that political win.
No, not a conspiracy, ladies and gentlemen. Not a conspiracy at all. We just have our little remotes, and we just punch, stop, fast forward when we don't want you to see something, like Donald Trump being victorious, like Donald Trump speaking truth. We just... In fact, instead of that, we're going to call this a dark day for America and say that America lost today.
You know, look, unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong that this is the way the framers wanted it to be. They wanted Congress, the people who are closest to their constituents, to be able to make the rules of the laws.
Unfortunately for America, the framers came up with Congress, says Dana Bash. So smart. So bashingly smart. What else on CNN? Let's go ahead and fast forward ourselves. What else does CNN have to say about this ruling?
What do you say to all those Americans out there who are watching this, who are frustrated and say, you know, Trump is getting away with breaking the law, that he files appeal after appeal. He tries to delay every proceeding that's brought against him in a way that is just, it just goes against what our judicial system should be about. I mean,
what, is this guy like Kingpin? Like, who's he interviewing here? He's interviewing Kingpin from Daredevil. I mean, it's a bold move to book Kingpin for a, like, rule of law judicial segment, but let's listen.
Just about anybody else would not have the ability to appeal things until kingdom come.
Well, actually, they do have the ability to do that. That's part of our justice system.
Well, but for all practical purposes, it doesn't happen. I mean, the vast majority of defendants don't have the resources to drag everything out in umpteen different cases across the country.
So, okay, so Kingpin actually just bodies Jim Acosta. Look at his face. He's like, what am I doing? Who booked this? It's who booked this? The best is the Colorado Secretary of State, who just straight up admits the game. Well, now that the Supreme Court has struck us down, the voters will get to decide.
The reaction is disappointment. I do believe that states should be able, under our Constitution, to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists. And ultimately, this decision leaves open the door for Congress to act to pass authorizing legislation. But we know that Congress is a nearly non-functioning body. So ultimately, it will be up to the American voters to save our democracy and no.
Speaking of a non-functioning body, like, whose face moves like this? You're an animatron. There's no way. You're not real. You're not real. So this is the Secretary of State of Colorado. This, whatever this is. And apparently, this humanoid, I think this is possibly one of Elon Musk's robots that's in beta testing right now. Apparently, this lizard with a skin suit on. There you go. That's the one I want. What is this? What the hell is this? What is that? Get out of here! Whatever that is. That is a non-functioning body. I can tell you that for certain. Ladies and gentlemen, final thing I'll show you is a non-functioning brain. Okay, and for that we go to The View.
I had far too much hope that the court would be united in this and not overstep in favor of Donald Trump. And I think what we saw was a court where justices that behaved in a partisan manner, and that disappointed
Amy Coney.
Oh, okay, it disappoints you. The justices, like the justices that were put on the court by your Lord and Savior Barack Obama and Joe Biden. Like Kagan, Jackson, and Sotomayor, who all voted in favor of this, 9-0. Keith Olbermann, final little cell phone here. Keith Olbermann going after the Democrat justices, saying they have proven themselves inept at reading and comprehension, and collectively the court has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved. But it was Keith Olbermann himself that dissolved his own personhood by admitting that he likes to pee on his own face. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, to this screed, Twitter account says, cry more. Keith Olbermann says, those aren't tears, fascist. They're urine. I'm sure you enjoy being bathed in it. But he's saying that Keith Olbermann's crying, which he is. And Keith Olbermann's saying that he's not crying, he's peeing, or it's pee on his face. Keith Olbermann pees on his face. I don't know. I don't know. But the meltdowns have been glorious, and they have been rather salty, whether it's pee or tears, both salty, ladies and gentlemen. And it's been a delight to watch. Remember that we trust you. So we'll give you the news. We'll give you our opinion on it, right? We do have ideas and opinions around here, but we will never, like, censor it for you. We'll never, like, interrupt and start screaming because we don't like what's being said or whatever. Like, we will gladly play a Joe Biden speech, right? We'll have comments about it. We'll think it's funny. We're not here to censor it for you. Like, how evil is that? How much do you disrespect and hate your audience if you are censoring for them some of the biggest news ever? You just clearly despise your audience. And
so here's the deal. How would you like to be my pretend children?
If it's an acting job, we should get paid.
Yeah, you're gonna get paid in experience.
Can I do an accent?
Let me hear some.
Hello!
No.
Okay. What's up, guys? Boy, Benny. It's totally understandable if you are embarrassed that your parents are Barack and Michelle Obama. After all, Michelle Obama did thank Harvey Weinstein at the White House and say he's an amazing man. Oh, wow. Look at this. Remarks by the First Lady at Careers in Film Symposium from the Obama White House. I want to thank my start by thanking Harvey Weinstein for organizing this amazing event. Harvey, this is possible because of Harvey. He's a wonderful human being and a good friend and a powerhouse. Wow, great job, Michelle.
Start by thanking Harvey Weinstein for organizing this amazing day. Harvey.
Look right behind Michelle's shoulder. Who is that? Is that Whoopi Goldberg? Remember this little clue because it'll come in handy later.
This is possible because of Harvey. He is a wonderful human being, a good friend, and just a powerhouse. And the fact that he and his team took the time to make this happen for all of you should say something, not about me or about this place, but about you.
It's amazing how the old Shakespearean adage, "You doth protest too much," really does ring true because, well, Harvey Weinstein, as we all know, is going to spend the rest of his life and die in prison because of hundreds of counts of sexual assault and rape. Democrats like Michelle Obama didn't have anything to say about that, weirdly. This from CNN. Democrats denounce Harvey Weinstein. Clinton's and Obama stay mum, along with Joe Biden. Very interesting here. A recent report from the New York Times cataloged accusations of sexual harassment against the filmmaker that spanned three decades. 3 days after the report, Weinstein was fired from the company that he co-founded. However, Hillary Clinton didn't say anything at all. The Obamas, who made millions of dollars off Harvey Weinstein and welcomed him to the White House, didn't say anything at all. First Lady Michelle Obama credited Weinstein for making the event happen and praised his wonderful person and a good friend. Very interesting here, ladies and gentlemen. Former President, Vice President Joe Biden, who has been an outspoken on the issue of sexual assault, also had not appeared to make any public statements about Weinstein. Wow. A spokesperson declined to comment. Remember, this is for Women in Film Symposium that the Obamas welcomed Weinstein to the White House. Oh, and who were one of those women in film? Well, Barack Obama's daughter. After all, Barack Obama, who finally weighed in on the Harvey Weinstein scandal, saying he's disgusted, left out the fact that he got his daughter a job interning with the sex pest, or whether he'll return the producer's campaign donations. Check this out. Barack Obama finally spoke out about Harvey Weinstein on Tuesday evening, 5 days after the Hollywood producer was accused of sexual assault. Now, again, he's serving the rest of his life in prison for it being proven. Michelle and I have been deeply disgusted by the recent reports, but no refunds, you see. He raised hundreds of millions of dollars for us, but no refunds. We won't give any of the money back. They're so disgusted that they're going to keep the money. Barack Obama, also then 18, to work at the Weinstein Company, made sure that she was working for Harvey Weinstein, the monster. Hillary Clinton finally broke her silence on her friend and mega donor Tuesday afternoon, showed no indication that she will give back any of his dirty money. These people are completely and totally filthy. Ladies and gentlemen, they pushed their daughter Malia to work for this monster. Of course, they took all of his money. And, well, Malia has taken that jumping off point working for Harvey Weinstein, and, well, has begun making films herself. Malia Ann, as she is now calling herself, is jumping into the film career. Meets the artist, Malia Ann, on the Heart Sundance Film Festival. Okay, so she's getting into the Lib Film Festival circuit. Just perfect, by the way. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, no one is more oppressed than the super rich Nepo babies whose parents run the world. No one is more oppressed. Remember, all the films are going to be about oppression. All the films are going to be about how tough life is. Obama's daughter trying to sneak past the Nepo baby discourse by not using her last name. Bro, you are Obama's daughter. says this tweet. It's gone viral. Oh, yeah. Check it out. Introducing Malia Ann, Obama's film director daughter, is using her middle name at Sundance as a bid to shake off the Nepo baby stigma. Malia Obama grew up in the White House with her father Barack Obama as president. She started her career as a director in her directorial film debut. She's going by another name, so she no longer takes the Obama name. Very interesting. So this article details how Malia Ann, not Malia Obama, has effectively used her credentials to get into the despicable, disgusting, predator-filled world of Hollywood. What a grotesque place to go. What literally possibly the last industry this side of OnlyFans that I would ever want my daughter to be in. OnlyFans, it goes pole dancing, OnlyFans, Hollywood. Like, I don't know which order is the worst there. What a grotesque place. Especially if you intern for Harvey Weinstein. Really remarkable. Isn't it funny how the Obamas are like all making media? Obama and Michelle are Netflix producers, and they're making documentaries, and they're trying to like shove their feet in the door in a production company and trying to push. They know the power of culture. Not that anyone's watching, but that is what they have taught Malia Ann. Malia started off as an intern on Halle Berry's CBS sci-fi series when she was just 15. She went on to intern for HBO's Girls when she was 17. She also won an internship for Harvey Weinstein's production company. Won an internship. Oh, well. Let's ignore the fact that Harvey Weinstein was like the biggest donor to your dad's campaign. She got her internship months before the sex pest abuse scandal broke, and the company effectively went belly up. She works as a writer, staff writer for Donald Glover's Amazon Prime series Swarm. I've never seen any of these things. Nobody's ever watched any of these series. I feel like she's just, Glover said at Vanity Fair in 2022, I feel like she's just somebody who's going to have to, really good things coming to her. Oh, okay. Has nothing to do with being the president's daughter. She got her short film accepted to Sundance, which is extremely competitive. How could that be? How did it happen? Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, why do we even care about this? We care about it because you should just admit you're a Nepo baby. Your dad was the president of the United States. What's the big deal? You're getting all these opportunities because your dad is effectively running the White House in a third term, and people are going to be nice to Malia Ann. Okay? We always get brought into these sort of phrase, the Sundance Film Festival, obviously, and not because we really care, and certainly not because we're trying to attack any kid, you know, trying to make it on the coattails of her powerful dad. I mean, that's a story as old as time in this country. We are simply curious about it because, well, when things are infected and you press on them, they hurt. Why are people so upset about this? The left, when finding out about the Nepo baby cover-up of Malia Ann, started losing their minds, right? You'll recall the lady who was sitting here on stage applauding for Harvey Weinstein, Whoopi Goldberg. Oh, yes, Whoopi. Whoopi's been sent out to attack people for going after Malia Ann. Whoopi Goldberg had a meltdown on The View because people simply noticed that Obama's daughter isn't using the name Obama.
If she knows she's an Obama, why do you care? Why do you care what she calls herself?
Whoopi Goldberg is showing her support for Malia Obama. During the February 21st episode of The View, the host discusses how Barack and Michelle Obama's oldest daughter is facing criticism after choosing to drop her famous last name and professionally go by Malia Ann.
And apparently some folks online are criticizing her for it, claiming everyone knows she's an Obama, so it's pointless to hide it. If she knows she's an Obama, why do you care? Why do you care what she calls herself?
As Whoopi notes, Malia isn't the first person to change her name in Hollywood. In fact, the actress herself changed her name from Karen Elaine Johnson.
She wanted to call herself Jeanette McDonald. She has the right to. If I could be Whoopi Goldberg, she could be whoever the hell she wants to be.
That's right.
I mean, why are people triggered by this kind of stuff?
And her co-host, Joy Behar, Sunny Hostin, Sarah Haynes, and Alyssa Farah Griffin definitely agree.
She is not thinking about her past.
By the way, the girl graduated from Harvard. She's been doing internships and assistant jobs. She worked as a staff writer. She's already paid some dues. So, you know.
And also, like, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yes.
She went as Malia Obama. She's riding her parents' coattails. And think of, I can't think of a bigger shadow to feel like you're living in than the president and first lady of the United States. She's trying to, you know, carve her own course in a new field that she's been pursuing. I totally
listen, couldn't. Leave this child alone. Leave her alone.
Not that the 25-year-old is faced. Her career is skyrocketing. Malia's directorial debut, The Heart, premiered at Sundance. Plus, she was a staff writer on Amazon Prime's Swarm. And according to show creator Donald Glover, parents didn't play a role in how she was treated. He told Vanity Fair in March 2022, "I feel like she's just somebody who's gonna have really good things coming soon. Her writing style is great," with his brother Stephen Glover adding, "We can't be easy on her just because she's the former president's daughter."
So, why are they so angry about this? Like, this is just, like, do you think the Bush daughters don't do the same thing? I mean, the Bush daughters do the same thing. This is because it is a system. The Bush daughters, like, so Jenna Bush has a job at NBC News. This is how it works in corporate media. They literally pay these politicians' kids to get access and give them opportunities, deservedly or not, in order to curry favor. This is how it works in corporate media. Whoopi Goldberg furiously defends Barack Obama's filmmaker daughter Malia after former first daughter faced backlash for using a stage name at her Sundance debut in an attempt to avoid Nepo baby stigma. You know, the problem with the Nepo baby thing is that you can't, if you're like the daughter of somebody who's worth like hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, what's the Obama brand worth? I don't even know. What's it worth to subvert the Constitution and run for three terms as president? It's like hard to make woke films when you are a Nepo baby. It's hard to play the victim when you come from one of the richest and most powerful families in the world. It's hard to play the victim and say that America is an evil, broken place when it gave your family an opportunity to be insanely wealthy when your dad was just a first-term senator. It's hard to do those things. It's very difficult. And so you kind of like, and this is the face of, oh my God, they have, how dare they call us out on this fraud, ladies and gentlemen. It's just tough when people notice, right? And people are really starting to get, whether it's Oprah and The Rock, like people are starting to really get sick of extremely rich, extremely powerful people telling us to do better. Starting to really, really upset quite a few people. Ladies and gentlemen, the last time I cared about, well, what The View had to say was when Greg Gutfeld commented on whales talking to each other underwater in what is still arguably my favorite thing to ever have happen on Fox News. Here we go.
In a future where our pets can talk to us. It sounds crazy, but researchers believe that artificial intelligence may allow us to one day speak to other species. And right now, they're trying to do it with whales. Greg, as you think about these kind of communications, what would you want most?
I don't know if you
with
want
guts to, in you.
Greg, you talk to whales. I'm not going to say it.
No, if I want to hear what whales have to say, I want The View.
Oh,
a second would say, I can't believe you would even think of that.
Whatever. Interesting times. The Obama daughters are dropping their last name. What does it tell you? I don't know, man. I don't know. Don't attack us for noticing, right? Yeah, that tends to be the crime these days. It's your boy, Benny. Like, share, and subscribe for more crimes. See ya. Ashley, thank you so much for being on the program, and some light at the end of the tunnel, some silver lining on these dark clouds. A January 6th political prisoner has now been freed based on the Supreme Court's review of Section 1512C2. Can you fill us in as to what's exactly happening here?
Right. So the Supreme Court in December announced that they would review the DOJ's application of 1512C2 obstruction of an official proceeding. This is a common felony. More than 320 January 6th defendants have been charged with 1512C2. It represents half of Special Counsel Jack Smith's four-count indictment against Donald Trump for January 6th. But of course, the DOJ has weaponized that document shredding statute that was passed in the wake of the Enron Arthur Anderson accounting scandal, and instead used it to criminalize political dissent. And the idea that if anyone interrupted a meeting of Congress, which think about how often that happens, you have committed this felony that could end up, could land you in prison for up to 20 years. So the DOJ has brought this against more than 320 defendants. Only one judge has dismissed the count. This is how it finally ended up at SCOTUS. But judges in Washington are so nervous that the Supreme Court will come back, oral arguments are in April, that they will come back, Benny, and reverse how DOJ has applied this. They're getting so nervous about it that defendants are now seeking early release for imprisonment on that count. And a few judges have now released January 6th defendants because there's a strong feeling that the Supreme Court will overturn how DOJ has used this. They're also asking DOJ to seek plea agreements on other counts instead of this 1512C2. So the former chief judge recently warned that in June and July, the federal courthouse in Washington could be a disaster with defendants seeking vacating of sentences, plea agreements, convictions, et cetera. And boy, wouldn't that be so well deserved by more than 15 judges who have allowed this count to go forward.
Mm. And you've sat through many of these trials, and they are heart-wrenching. Mm-hmm. The treatment of these January 6th political prisoners is evil. It is like it is truly like gulag-esque. We pray for them, and we thank you for your reporting on this. And before we sort of get to more of the Supreme Court taking on Jack Smith, I did want to stop for a second, and because I read the statute. I've read the statute a couple of times, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. I was physically at the White House when libs, an army of liberal orcs, stormed the White House, broke through the fences, threw bottles and bricks and everything out of the White House lawn. Donald Trump was taken into a safe room. They injured over 400 different security officers, Secret Service officers. Like, if you are causing the president's – if you are threatening the president's safety so much that he needs to be taken to a safe room – isn't that obstructing of an official? Isn't everything the president does an official proceeding? Where is the gulag for all these leftist orcs?
Well, there is no gulag. And more infuriatingly, Benny, all of those criminal cases, to the extent that charges were brought against what you're talking about, the protesters at Lafayette Square outside the White House in May and June of 2020, after George Floyd died, and this lasted for weeks. I mean, they were destroying monuments. They were burning parts of St. John's Church, which is across the street. And to your point, trying to scale the fence at the White House and overtake the White House, prompting the lockdown of the White House and placing Donald Trump and his family in a secure location. All those charges have been dropped, completely memory hold. And so obstruction of an official proceeding, seditious conspiracy. I mean, you name all the charges that I've seen in January 6th. Could easily have been brought against those protesters. But all of those cases were dropped and forgotten in memory hold, even though that happened 7 months before January 6th. Not 7 years, 7 months. Could easily be bringing those same charges.
It really does sicken the soul because it's the same people, right? It's the same people inside of these institutions, and they were there when Trump was there, right? It leads to a much larger question about the systemic rot inside of the system. I know this is ancient history, but during the Kavanaugh hearings in 2017, 2018, I was physically in elevators when senators were being assaulted. Like, I was standing there in elevators with my senator, Chuck Grassley, when libs stormed the elevator and like stopped him from going to a meeting. Like that's as much as what happened on potentially January 6th. and not a single person was charged. They took over the Senate like a million times. These like these unhinged lunatics, mm-hmm. and stopped to try and stop Kavanaugh from being put on the court, and nothing. I mean, to my knowledge, not a single person was charged. But apparently, you could have charged them with a 1512C2 the entire
time. Easily, yeah. And threatening lawmakers and disruptive conduct in a congressional building. Look, you don't even have to go that far back. You can go back, Benny, a few months. Look at what the pro-Palestinian demonstrators, they did the same thing outside the White House at least twice, assaulting federal officers. They also disrupted numerous times Senate proceedings. They occupy parts of the Cannon House office building, which is forbidden. You cannot, you can't take over and occupy and demonstrate in the Cannon House office building. I personally watched a video of two men coming right in Marjorie Taylor Greene's face, screaming at her. I mean, no one on January 6th got that close to federal lawmakers. Were those men arrested, thrown in a gulag, charged with threatening lawmakers or obstruction of an official proceeding or seditious conspiracy? Of course not.
No. So I guess I'll ask the bigger question after this, because I want to cover what the Supreme Court did with taking up the immunity case. You've been nonstop on this on X. Can you sort of fill us in? It's how we started the top of the show. Obviously, the people that we hate, the people we dislike the very most are having truly like unhinged therapy
right.
couch meltdowns over this. So that means something good must be happening.
Exactly right. So yesterday, the Supreme Court granted cert, meaning that they will take up the lower court ruling, both district court and appellate court in Washington, that denied Donald Trump's claims of presidential immunity from criminal prosecution. This stems from Special Counsel Jack Smith's January 6th indictment, which was handed down on August 1st. Now, I want to disabuse anyone out there, and if you're arguing with someone like Andrew Weissman or Rachel Maddow or anyone who is completely losing their mind on cable news and certainly social media, this case has been fast-tracked from the very beginning. Think about this, Benny. Usually the typical J6 case from indictment to trial takes anywhere between 18 to 24 months, especially high-profile cases. Judge Chutkan fast-tracked this and only gave Donald Trump and his defense lawyer 7 months between the indictment and the original March 4th trial. What they knew was going to happen in the interim, Benny, is that Donald Trump was going to argue that he is entitled to presidential immunity, which is what he did in a motion in October. Judge Chutkan waited 2 months. If anyone wants to blame the delay on what's happened here, she waited 2 months between that motion and handing down her history-making order that claimed that presidents are indeed subjected to criminal prosecution. Now, that set in motion then, of course, the appellate process. Jack Smith, in what he himself called an extraordinary request, sought to leapfrog over the appellate court, the standard next routine step for any defendant. He went to the Supreme Court immediately in mid-December and said, this is so important, we need to bypass the appellate court process, ask the Supreme Court to take this up immediately. They denied that request. The appellate court then expedited the case. So Donald Trump filed his appeal December 7th. They held oral arguments a month later. Ben, usually this takes months before this happens. Then a month later, they hand down their opinion, of course, upholding Judge Chutkan's ruling. So everyone is on board denying Donald Trump presidential immunity. This is a matter that has never been addressed by the courts, by the Department of Justice, nowhere. It is unprecedented. So the idea that this should be fast-tracked because the Democrats, never Trump Republicans, the corporate media are so desperate to get an easy conviction in a Washington, D.C. courtroom where DOJ has a 100% conviction rate for January 6th defendants. Not a single defendant has been fully acquitted by a D.C. jury. They know this is the easy one. And the Supreme Court said, yes, we will take up this case. We're going to hold oral arguments the week of April 22nd. And then that is now prolonging what we call people that we hate, I'll say hate, are thought that this would be an easy conviction before the convention in July, let alone before the election.
Yes. And now, I mean, now it's seeming like there's not going to be any decision until the end of summer, maybe. And you never know with the Supreme Court, right? Like, you never really know. So
So just to give people the timeline real quickly, if the Supreme Court even comes back at the end of May with a decision, which would be very hasty, you have to add 3 months onto that because Judge Chutkan has said she will give Donald Trump 7 months to prepare for trial. Well, they've already cut out more than 3 months as this appellate process has made its way through the system. So if the Supreme Court comes back at the end of May, she has to add on these almost 3 months for pretrial preparation that's been suspended since December. That would move the trial earliest to the beginning of August. If the Supreme Court comes back at June, which is the end of their term, that pushes the trial to the end of September. The trial will be going on in Washington while people are voting, but there's no way the trial will conclude with a conviction before Election Day. And that is what these legal observers, like Andrew Weissman, finally realize and are going crazy over.
They really are. We poured so much salt on them at the beginning of the show. It was so much fun. So, okay, I want to get to the bigger question here. And you and I have talked details quite a bit. And the audience loves you, and you have such a profound, deep well of knowledge about this. And you are one of the only reporters that I know that actually sits through these trials and really watches what's happening. And what you're seeing is, of course, the super state turning on their true enemy, which is the American people. And they are scared that the American people are waking up to the amount of corruption that's going on. And it seems like the regime is crumbling on all fronts. James Comer was just on the show a few moments ago talking about the embarrassment of the Hunter Biden having the FBI come through and, like, burn one of their sources just to try and protect the Bidens publicly. I mean, it's amazing. You never saw it happen with the Steele dossier when you lied to the FBI, but here we are. And so it does seem like there's a very, like, real collapse that's happening in real time. And there's, like, a big containment effort. And the biggest the sum of all fears is Donald Trump becoming president again and then fixing this system. As somebody who has really been, like, a mechanic on the inside of this engine and seen it yourself, right? You've truly, like, seen how the gears move and work. How does Trump fix it? Right? Like, so what needs to happen? I know it's a big question. We have the time. But what needs to happen so that this doesn't happen again? Not to the left. I don't want this to happen to leftists. I don't want it to happen to people on the right. I don't want it to happen to any American. Right? It's, like, plainly evil. So what do we do?
Well, look, I have said the real villains here are the federal judges who have allowed all of this to happen, who act as nothing more than a rubber stamp. And I'm talking about federal judges in Washington, D.C., Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, should not have its own federal prosecutor, D.C. U.S. Attorney Matthew Graves. They should not have, certainly, their own FBI office, the Washington Field Office, and more importantly, they should not have their own federal courthouse, which is the D.C. District Court, D.C. Appellate Court, because they all work in conjunction. Not to root out real crime, say, the crime wave that is taking over Washington, D.C., no. They are using all of that authority to go after Donald Trump, his associates, his family members, and now his voters. Donald Trump, if I were him, and I don't care what the standard or basis is, executive order, day one. The D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office is shut down and defunded from any federal funds. Ditto for the Washington Federal Courthouse. Ditto for the Washington Field Office. We know the rot and corruption. We've seen it. This is also the source of Russiagate. All of the bad things that happen in this country happen right there within a few blocks of each other. Shut it down. And I'll tell you what, Benny, the Supreme Court coming back and reversing DOJ's abuse of 1512C2 will give Donald Trump and Republicans the best reason to shut down this system because of the lives that they have destroyed, the weaponization of the law, people going to jail, people killing themselves. As you know, Matthew Perna committing suicide after realizing they were going to ask for years in jail after he pleaded guilty to obstruction of an official proceeding. So that will be the basis. That will go a long way in shutting down the – now, it will shut down then doing the reverse, but then it just goes to other jurisdictions. So right. That, to me, would be step number one.
Right. Ooh, into my veins. Please, and you can get Julie Kelly into your veins, not in a Hunter Biden way, okay, but like not in a San Francisco street corner way, but into your inbox.
I prefer banana glass. Yeah.
Yes, that's right, into your inbox. Declassified is the Julie Kelly Substack, Declassified with Julie Kelly. This is the best way to find her work. And also, please follow on X. Did I get that right, Julie?
Yes, I believe it's now X. We all have to make. And Benny, I will tell people, I'm going to be in a Florida courtroom tomorrow. Judge Aileen Cannon, I will be there covering the latest hearing in the classified documents case and expecting a lot of fireworks in that matter. And the trial set for May 20th, which she may set another trial date in the summer, which will then for sure end any hopes of a D.C. trial in 2024.
I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing to see the reversals here. And it does feel like there's a shift in a real shift in energy happening. And praise God for that. Thank you, Julie. Godspeed to you.
Thank you.
What's going on, Facebook? It's your boy, Benny. Thank you for watching our video. If you wish to help us fight the communists, share the video, like the video, and join our 1.8 million person strong community on our page, Benny Johnson. Click on the three little dots right up here. That will allow you to put our page in the priority list for your feed, and it lets you see when we are live. Don't you want that notification to find out when we're live? That's what we're all about here. Let's go save America together. Thanks, Facebook.